Thanks, Steve. Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Monday edition of our show. I'm Bill Leff. That's Wendy Snyder. If you want to participate, if you want to call us or text us, 312-981-7200 is your best route. Hi, Wendy.
Good morning.
Hi, nice to see you.
Nice to see you, too. The last time we saw each other was at Tree Time out in Lake Barrington.
And wasn't that fun?
Bertrand, that was your first time out there.
I'm going back.
Overwhelmed, weren't you?
Yeah, I'm I'm already planning to go back. I'm going back.
Can I clear up a moment that happened very early in the show? Because both my wife and one of my daughters and two different friends asked me what exactly was going on. Toward the very beginning of the show, you were reading something. You were reading one of our sponsors, and I just started to laugh, and I couldn't stop laughing. And the blame goes on our friend Steve Bertrand.
I don't know what you're talking about.
I don't know what you're talking about. Was I there?
Because I share.
Steve has a bag of... Are they potato chips? Is that what they were?
Yeah, they were potato chips.
Oh, my gosh. He has potato chips?
Well, yeah, but that's
amazing.
Not the good part. So as you're reading, we're about to go on the air. He just takes one out and holds it up to my mouth as if to say, I'm going to feed you potato chips during the broadcast. And normally, if it was just the three of us in a room, I would have gladly have accepted that potato chip. But there was a crowd of people, and I didn't want them to think that's the norm.
That's part of Steve's contract. Right. He has to feed you snacks.
Give me snacks during the show. So both he and I found it very amusing. Within a split second of how ridiculous is this moment.
It was just self-amusing, pretty much.
I didn't even notice.
No?
You did. You called us out on it. Do I have to separate you guys?
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Once I do something, I forget it.
It's over.
It's done.
It was sea salt and vinegar chips.
The kind of chip I would normally enjoy.
That's what I thought.
I would have liked it.
Tried to share.
It just set a bad precedent.
You guys missed a listener. Peter Rim came out when we left and dropped off a bunch of hand-rolled, handmade sushi.
Oh, really?
No, I saw that. That's why I left.
You don't like sushi?
Steve's offended by Japanese food of any kind.
Well, you guys were all gone, so I took a bunch of trays of bistro wasabi sushi home.
Ooh.
And that's what we ate all weekend. It was really, really good.
That's a very nice bonus.
So that's out in Hoffman Estates. Just missed you. I was there shopping till 4:30. I bought a lot of stuff.
Did you stay that long? Yeah.
A lot of decorations. Hit the clearance rack. Got some fake flowers that I loved. It's just go to Tree Time if you've never been there. And as Lori and Joe point out, go there and steal their ideas. You don't have to buy anything.
Don't steal their merchandise.
No.
That would be wrong.
But their ideas,
Are stealable. So many great listeners came out on Friday. Thanks to every one of them. One of the more intriguing listeners was the lady who had, and I'm not exaggerating when I say this, the WGN logo.
I loved it.
Tattooed on her wrist.
I really loved that.
Did you see that, Steve?
I did see that. I didn't think it was real at first.
I didn't either. I thought it was one of those.
Was it Allison? Was that her name?
Yes, with a Y.
Did not lick off.
But what was more impressive... God.
Steve gets to know the listeners a lot more than both you and I put together.
Well, he was there an hour before us,
right.
So he had
so
more time.
So whatever goes
him.
On, goes on.
What impressed me more than the tattoo, and I say this jokingly, is she brought a WGN cookbook and there was a young Steve Bertrand.
Yes.
Oh, that was a look, wasn't it?
A very young Steve Bertrand.
Yeah, that would have been Spike's mustard, so that was the early 90s.
That was your recipe?
The scallops, yeah.
I didn't even look at your recipe.
Very nice mustard vinaigrette for grilled scallops in there, yeah.
What year, Steve, roughly would that have been?
I remember. 1926.
Was it 1926?
No, it would have been early, like 92, 94, something like that.
I remember the station putting that cookbook out. Did they just do one version, or was there a second edition also?
There might have been a second edition, but I don't remember that one.
But everybody just looked so young.
Mm. I had bad glasses, bad hair, bad clothes.
Man, yep. I thought it was all good. Yeah. Nothing bad.
It was
bad.
A sign of the time, Steve. Don't take any of the blame.
Bill had a perm for a while.
Yeah, I did. I was not in the cookbook because I didn't work here. It would have been really strange
right.
to have included me. But
here's Bill left.
This guy with
a perm.
Who's the guy with the chips?
He's got a recipe for you for a bad haircut.
And you blame the Brady Bunch for that, correct?
Yeah, yeah.
Because
they went through a phase where they all...
There was a year where the Bradys, who all had straight hair for the first four seasons, all of a sudden had perms, and I went, well, the Bradys did it. I should probably get one, too.
Mm.
It was a mistake.
Well,
it was a horrible mistake.
You and Jerry Taft were my favorite perms.
Right. Well, thank you. That's very kind of you. And then I also want to thank the listener, Jay, who brought up pictures of the Cubs. You know, I had talked last week about how when I was a kid, Jewel food stores would give away pictures of either Cubs or White Sox players throughout the baseball season. She brought them and said, I'm going to need these back. And of course, I mean, we were just talking about them. I wasn't going to keep them. But then at the end, she said, why don't you take these? And she gave me Ernie Banks' picture and Ron Santo's picture.
Oh, my God. Those are the two best ones.
Those are the two best ones. Terry, not keen on the idea of me still posting them on my bedroom wall. I understand that, but I'll find a place for them.
How about your closet? That's
what, I want them, especially this month, I want them in a more prominent place in my home. So maybe on my garage door so my neighbors can see the pride.
You better waterproof them.
I'm going to have to waterproof both photos, yeah.
Well, thanks to everybody who came out because it was really, really fun. And I'm really feeling festive.
Yeah, it puts you in the mood right away over there, doesn't it?
And keep in mind, if you have an artificial tree that you would like to trade in, do it now. That's the reason we do this so early before Halloween.
Yeah.
So the fine people at Goodwill can get the trees ready for a less fortunate family that doesn't have one and can't afford one for Christmas. So you got to jump on it early.
Yep. So do it now. Go to either Tree Time or go to any Goodwill store. All the details are there. We'll take a quick break, and then there's a whole lot more to discuss. Like I said earlier, if you want to be a part of it, 312-981-7200 is the number. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. It's Bill Leff and it's Wendy Snyder. Speaking of sports, if I may for just a moment, I know that a lot of people are down on Anthony Rizzo right now. He's only had one hit so far in the playoffs.
It happens.
There are slumps.
Shouldn't.
People go through slumps. He did also, I will remind you, go through a slump last year at this exact same time in the playoffs. Bad time to go into this sort of a tailspin. However, after the season he's had, after the career he's had, you can't sit a guy like Anthony Rizzo. He's always a threat, even though he's only had one hit. I was watching the game with my wife last night, and he's the last batter for the Cubs. And he knows, my wife knows that he hasn't been doing well. My wife goes, well, you pinch hit for him here, don't you? And I go, oh, no. Uh-uh.
Why not? Is that a girl question?
No.
I shouldn't even say a girl question.
It's not a girl question. I know that if you're not a huge fan of the game, you say to yourself, well, if a guy is doing this poorly, let him sit a game or two and bring in a guy that's got more power at the moment. But it doesn't matter about the moment. You say to yourself, Anthony Rizzo's the second biggest home run threat on the Cubs, so you let him bat.
It's just so fascinating to me how people are like they're starting to blame these guys who
right.
they've loved for 170 games so
right.
far this year.
Right.
And now they're like, oh, this guy's a loser. Get him out of there.
Can
it's
I
like,
tell
come
you,
on.
One of the saddest moments I've ever seen in sports, Steve, for years and years and years, we're going back a couple of years on this one, Keith Magnuson was one of the most beloved Blackhawks.
Maggie.
He just was. People loved Keith Magnuson. Well, then he retires, and then they make him the coach. And I got to say, he was not a great coach for the Blackhawks. He just wasn't. But I went to a couple games where Keith Magnuson was the coach, and I saw Chicago Blackhawks fans who loved him, just loved him, booing him. And I went, oh, don't do that. You love this guy.
Yeah, but not as a coach. You just said it.
Yeah, but there's... because Bill, I've been thinking about it this weekend too. People who turn on,
right?
It's almost like you're mad at them because they're not playing for you,
right?
You know, like you're part of the team,
right.
And you're mad at your teammate or something. This
Anthony Rizzo wants to succeed. He's
really super bad.
He's not going to the park going, I hope I'm 0-3. I hope I'm 0-4.
I'm really a Sox fan. That's what he's saying.
I guarantee you, it disturbs him as ardent of a Cubs fan as you may be. Anthony Rizzo's wearing this harder than anybody else is, so he'll get through this. You know, it's a terrible time to go into a slump is during the playoffs when your team needs you, but he'll get through this. I mean, he's a good guy. It'll work out.
It might be my fault that the Cubs lost yesterday.
You're taking the blame on this? How come?
I really have turned the corner. I'm a Sox fan, born and bred, going to stay that way forever, but this team deserves it. That's all I can say.
That's very big of you to say.
I don't know that I'm not a Cubs fan,
right.
But they deserve it. Well, we were at Brookfield Zoo yesterday, and I didn't realize it till after the Cubs lost. I was feeding goats.
Yeah.
I was petting goats.
Uh-huh.
Took pictures of the kids with goats.
So
isn't that the curse?
Equating this to the goat curse? I think you're off the hook.
All right, good.
I think you're okay. I wouldn't take too much of the blame on this. Some of it, maybe, but not all of it.
I just, you know, I was there in the Hamel family, I don't know what it's called. It's
goat enclosure?
Wild environment or wild town. I don't remember the name of it. But
were you in wild town over the weekend?
You walk
good
in
you.
And there are emus walking around you.
Yeah.
One chased my great niece, Addie.
Oh, I remember that bar.
And
an emu is a flightless bird
second
that emanated
largest.
From Australia.
Yep. The ostrich is the first largest. I went back to my script and there was a keeper there and I said, the emu is the second largest bird, flightless bird. And she just looked at me and I said, I used to work on the railroad train. And she goes, oh, great.
Right.
No, she was actually very nice. But they have emus walking around.
Don't they look prehistoric? They're one of those animals that you go, how does this still exist?
A bird dinosaur.
Yeah.
And then they had wallabies all over the place, which are these adorably cute koala bear-faced kangaroo that's much smaller.
Yeah.
They're just hopping around.
Yeah.
And then there's, of course, a goat feeding area where we went to feed the goats. And I would have boycotted the goats, but I kind of forgot the Cubs were playing.
There's no warning there saying, attention, Cubs fans, what you do now may alter the performance of the team later on.
There should
wasn't
be.
Any of that.
And one of the damn goats chewed on my purse and untied my shoe.
They're talented.
I know.
Say what you want about them.
The lace was like half down his throat. The keeper had to go, come on, give me the lace back.
Is it up to them? You worked at the zoo, so you'll know this more than anybody. A lot of times with the animals, they'll have a situation where it's up to the animal if it wants to be inside and kind of apart from the people or outside. Do they give all those animals that you just mentioned that option? Or is it just, no, we said to go outside. You got to go outside right now.
They're behind like some gates. So they stay in an enclosure, but the wallabies, if they wanted to, could come hopping up on the sidewalk.
Oh, they could.
And the emu was going crazy.
Yeah, because?
I don't know.
It just does from time to time?
It just was kind of running after my niece and her stroller, my great niece and her stroller, and the keeper called for backup. I'm not
really?
Even kidding.
So what
we
happens
need backup in the emu yard.
So what happens then? Just more officials from the zoo come, more trainers?
Yeah, they just kind of shoot it away. But these were hand-raised emus.
Yeah.
But they're really big now.
Did you, in the years that you worked there, was there ever an incident that got out of hand in terms of the animals? Did they ever gang up on a visitor?
No.
Or escape? They never escaped one of their enclosures.
No. And growing up in Brookfield, it was kind of cool because at night you could hear the lions roaring.
Oh, that is cool.
It was scary because then you think, boy, if they break through.
Yeah. You saw the situation about a little less than a week ago in England at a zoo in or near London where a gorilla got loose in the zoo. Did you see that?
No.
That's very scary.
That would scare
yeah.
me terribly.
That's really scary. Like if a goat gets loose, there's worse things in the world, right? Or a wallaby gets loose. You just.
Yeah, they wouldn't hurt you.
It wouldn't be terrible, but gorillas have a different temperament. But they just show this gorilla walking around the zoo, and they brought it down with a tranquilizer and put it back where it needed to be. But yikes.
That would scare me.
Right.
Very much. And there's also this exhibit that if anyone has seen Alfred Hitchcock's The Birds, which I have, you have.
Many times.
My kids haven't seen it. So we went in this place, and as you walk in, there are all these leafless trees and probably thousands of parakeets all perched on there.
Yeah.
So then you go for $2. Was it $2? Yeah. You get a little wooden stick, and there's a clump of, like, bird seed.
Yeah.
And you hold it out, and the parakeets come and land on that stick. So they're all over the place. And it was kind of freaky. They were flying right past your head and everything.
Do you get to wear, like, a raincoat or something in there? I'd look like Paddington Bear walking through there.
You know, I didn't even think of getting bird pooped on.
Yeah.
I didn't even think of that. No incidences.
None?
No.
That's a miracle.
But I hadn't been to the zoo in a while. And seriously, growing up in Brookfield, we went there all the time. I worked there for years. And it's pretty great.
Yeah, I bet. Speaking of animals, Wendy, the biggest complaint we get, and we get thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of complaints every day, the biggest complaint we get is that we don't ever have any bunnies on the show. And when I say bunnies, of course, I'm referring to Playboy bunnies. Today, we will take care of that. We will remedy that situation. Not one, but two Playboy bunnies will be on the show. And this happened in a weird way. We were talking about something completely unrelated a couple of weeks ago.
We were talking about Donald Trump's beauty pageants, how he mentioned that one woman had put on so much weight.
Right.
And this Joanne, I believe, called in and said, I was a Playboy bunny, and we knew of weight restrictions, and we, you know, if we put on a few pounds, somebody would say you're not going to be out on the floor serving until you take that weight off.
Right.
So she totally understood. I thought it would be kind of interesting. I've never met a real Playboy bunny, have you?
I think, yes, a couple of them.
Oh, you're a cad.
I'm a cad. That's so true. That's the word that best describes me, isn't it? Is cad.
Not really. All right. Cad Junior, maybe.
So, not one, but two Playboy bunnies, former Playboy bunnies, will be with us to talk about the lifestyle and a book that they have written. That'll come up. And then there's plenty of other things happening. So stay where you are. It's Bill Effen. It's Wendy Snyder on WGN.
It's Bill Leff, it's Wendy Snyder, and thank you, Steve. Great job. Steve, you might want to stick around because we have a former Playboy bunny in the studio with us, Joanne Green. Hi, Joanne.
Hi, how are you today, Wendy?
We're really good. We were talking off the air. I have never really met a Playboy bunny in person, so this is an honor for me. Bill, you said you've met Playboy
bunnies? Dozens of them. The circles I travel in just lead me to meeting a lot of them, yeah.
Where'd you meet them?
Sometimes in my dreams. at the Consumer Electronics Show that they used to have at McCormick Place, they'd always have a booth set up, and you could meet some of the Playboy staff and the bunnies, and very nice ladies.
Thank you. I appreciate that. We were always offered work, and sometimes we took it, sometimes no.
At various trade shows and that sort of thing,
correct.
Sure.
And the choice was up to you, or were you told where you had to be and what time you had to be there?
We had certain activities that we participated in to meet the community that were corporate sponsored. Like there was a bunny baseball team, and we went in a bus and we met the opposing team, which was usually a radio station.
Yeah,
and that of course we had a. Do together. And I remember when Joe Frazier was training.
Yeah,
was it the Thrilla in Manila?
Probably.
Yeah.
And another one of the girls and myself, we got up and we had to do road work, and there were camera crews there and stuff like that.
Oh, nice.
And it was pretty fun. So
I realize now you will have to put your headphones on because you have a former bunny who we are introducing right now, who could not be with us because she's out. Where are you in California right now, Suzanne?
I'm in Virginia.
All right. Suzanne Singer, another former Playboy bunny. How long were you a bunny?
Actually, I'm kind of embarrassed to say I was a bunny 11 years, which was most unusual.
That's a long time in bunny years.
Yes, it is. Bunny years, human years, too. So, yes, it was a very long time, but I made good money there. I worked very hard, and I had a child to take care of, so, I didn't see any reason to go somewhere else. Plus, I really did like my job.
Did you have a boy or a girl? I got to ask you, Suzanne.
Oh, I had a little girl.
All right, because a boy growing up to go, you know what my mom was? A sexy woman.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, my daughter just rolls her eyes and says, you know, like it's no big deal, like everybody had a mom that, you know, worked at Playboy.
Sure, of course.
And Joanne, how long were you a bunny?
I was there for 2 years. In my club, the average was 8 weeks. It took the girls 8 weeks to realize they were not going to be stars. In essence, we were waitresses.
That's exactly right.
Now, I have obviously never been to the Playboy Club that was here in Chicago.
Yeah.
So this is a stupid, naive question. Was it like a restaurant? Was it a restaurant bar? What was it? A nightclub? Was it all of the above?
I was at a resort, the Great Gorge Resort in
New Jersey.
McAfee, New Jersey, and we had...
Boy, you're familiar with that, Bill. Good job.
You were, actually.
I like geography. That's the thing.
Yes. We had hotel rooms. We had a pool with bunny service. We had a VIP room that you couldn't work without a foreign language. And God knows why nobody in New Jersey spoke anything other than Jersey. And let's see, we had a main dining room. We had a showroom. We had the likes of Sonny and Cher and Charo and David Steinberg and the Four Tops, Temptations. Oh, Helen Reddy. Suzanne, who did you have at your club?
And you were out in L.A. when you did it, Suzanne?
Yes, I worked in the L.A. club, and we had two rooms. We had bands in the living room, which was a large room, and then we had headliners, which was in the smaller room, like, you know, more of an intimate nightclub room. So we had, you know, people of that era coming in and singing. We had Lainey Kazan at one point, who even had her name on the room. I never quite understood that. But she was the only headliner for a number of months, probably 6 to 8 months. In that small room.
And I know she was a favorite of Mr. Hefner's, so that probably played into it a little bit.
Correct.
I'm sure that it did, yes.
And appeared in the magazine.
Yeah.
Joanne, you mentioned that you needed to know a foreign language to work the VIP room. I'll ask both you women, what kind of training did you have to do to become a bunny?
Suzanne?
Well, we had bunny training school when I was hired for the opening of the L.A. Club, which Hefner built from scratch. And we had to have we had makeup classes, we had some wine classes, but most importantly, we had a call-in order on our drinks, on our tray. And it was 17 different categories, and you had to know whether there was ice in the glass. You had to know whether what the garnish was, because you went to the bartender, and this is, was the secret of the really fast service that Hefner demanded of the bunnies and the club. You would call in the order in which you were taught, so your glasses would be in the specific 17-category order. And then after the bartender had made the drink, then you would put the garnish in and hurry out of the kitchen and serve your customers.
And if I might interrupt, I believe the bar was set up in the same way, so it just matched, yes. And we rolled.
Yeah. Yes. Explain, if you wouldn't mind, explain to Wendy and to everybody listening, the art of the bunny dip.
Suzanne?
there was a reason for that. Hefner did not want any bunnies bending over the table to set down a drink or a plate or anything else, because he didn't feel that that was ladylike because of, you know, the cleavage issue.
Sure.
So
boy,
you
look at the morals on that guy.
Yeah, I know. Isn't that a dichotomy?
Mm-hmm.
So you sort of backed up to the table. You pointed your tail at the table, and you put one leg behind the other as though you were going to, you know, like bow to the queen. And so you dipped down on both knees and you took your arm, whatever arm, you know, was prominent, and then you took the drink off of the tray. You lifted your arm up and back, almost to your back, and set the drink down on the table in that manner. And in that way, it was graceful and it looked nice, it looked ladylike, and there was no bending over the table and showing your cleavage.
You know, a lot of women would say, how could you stoop so low to be a bunny? But I'm listening to you ladies talk. You're beautiful. I don't see you, Suzanne, but Joanne, you're a beautiful woman. You got to see all these concerts. It was just really being a waitress and getting great tips. Nothing wrong with it.
Very true, and not only that, since I was isolated in Great Gorge, we had bunny dormitories on the property. The girl that I shared a room with had come from the convent in Newark.
Really?
She had more protection in Playboy than she did there.
Wow.
And if I may go back to the cleavage, we all have cleavage because the way the costumes were made is like a corset. And there were fishbones
yeah,
down the front in the back, and then they cinched it to you, and I think cinched a little bit more, and then each cup at the minimum was a 34C.
Wow.
And some of us didn't fit it, and what we did is we took our black nylons, those that I had run, and the seamstress
okay,
disinfected it. We put them into the cup and placed ourselves on top. So when we talk cleavage, there was cleavage.
Yeah,
so
sure.
More push-up than like an added push-up to a push-up already.
Absolutely. The minimum, like I said, was 34C. Suzanne, was that correct by you?
Yes, absolutely. Yes, we called it stuffing, and we all stuffed.
Yeah.
The bunny costumes were really a wonder of modern architecture when you stop and think about it, weren't they?
Yes, they were.
Yeah.
Yes, they were.
All right, it's so funny that women would take nylons that ran and stuff their bras, and guys use tube socks.
Right.
Why do we always use
always footwear?
Foot stuff?
We don't know why. Nobody knows why. Joanne, the reason we originally got to talk to you is we were talking about Donald Trump's mandate with things like his beauty pageants to maintain a certain weight. He's been criticized for telling one of the former Miss Universe pageant winners, you can't gain all this weight, it's bad for business. And you're kind of, you're certainly sympathetic to this. You know a little something about this, right?
Correct. We had a bunny mother that checked us out, or her assistant before we did, and she told us what costume we were going to wear. If you were teetering on a weight, you got into your black costume. Everybody had a print and a solid, and the girls that were a little bit larger had a black one.
Black is slimming, you know.
Exactly. Thank you. And in addition, I was going to say she coordinated the room, solid stripes or whatever. And then we were let go. Our eyelashes, our hair, our everything had to be in place. And if not, you were bounced. And then the room directors, once you got there, if something happened or they didn't like the way you looked, you were gone. There was a reserve list that they pulled from, and you weren't released until everybody was on the floor.
Yeah.
And you're not going to make money if you're not working. So, and Suzanne, you can comment on this as well. You knew that there were certain weight restrictions and ways you needed to look, or you weren't going to work.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So you just definitely didn't want to, you know, do anything that was inappropriate as far as Playboy was concerned, because you knew you wouldn't be working. So you know, as my mama would say, you minded your P's and Q's.
Or T's and A's. I'm sorry, I had to say that.
Yes.
All right, Suzanne, hang on a second. We have Suzanne Singer, who is coming to us. You're from West Virginia right now? That's where you're living?
Virginia.
Oh, Virginia. And we have Joanne Green, a listener who is now in the studio. We're going to continue talking about Playboy bunnies. 312-981-7200. It's Bill Leff, Wendy Snyder, 720 WGN. It's Bill and Wendy at 720 WGN, and we're talking Playboy bunnies with a former bunny, Joanne Green, and on the phone from Virginia is another former bunny, Suzanne Singer. Girls, you were talking about knowing the restrictions that were put forth, like you had to be a certain weight, your eyelashes had to be perfect, your hair had to look good, or you didn't work, and therefore you didn't make money. But a bunny mother was the one who would weigh you in or check you out. It wasn't like Hugh Hefner was coming up and saying, hey, you can't work today because you're not looking good.
That's right.
So, I mean, it's like when Donald Trump was criticizing Miss Universe, it was coming directly from
his
mouth.
It's weird that he would micromanage to that extent, you know, but Hugh Hefner kind of stayed back a little bit. A nice man to work for, Mr. Hefner?
I never met him.
Oh, you never met him? No.
Ms. Suzanne, did you? You were in Los Angeles.
Yes, I met him a number of times in the club. He would come in with usually a very large entourage and usually late at night, the second show, and the whole party would have drinks and watch the show, and then they would leave. And I also met him at the mansion, but I did not know him well. I just went on for his Sunday evening movies and dinner, and then I left.
Wait, you had movie night?
Yes. In L.A., Hefner offered the bunnies the opportunity to come to the mansion on Sunday night where he had a first-run movie. And, of course, this was many years ago before there was a lot of, you know, DVDs and VCRs. So it was a big deal, and he would have the movie in his big living room in his Holmby Hills house, and he would have a Sunday night buffet. And being a single mom, because my husband deserted us, being a single mom, you know, I didn't have a lot of money, and so I took advantage of the Sunday evening free dinner because it was wonderful, and the free movie. And
who's not going to take advantage of that?
Well, it was all free, so you know, nothing is better than free. So, but you know, there were always a lot of people there.
Like who? Name drop.
Well, you know, the people of that era, you know, Robert Culp and Hefner had a lot of friends at that time, and they all liked to, you know, come around the club and be there, and you know, people that, you know, your current audience probably has not heard of, because you know, this was back mainly in the 70s.
Suzanne, they'd always show in the magazine. It was always Robert Culp. It was always Elliot Gould, and Shel Silverstein was there
every day.
You always saw him there.
Yes.
Children's author.
Right.
All three of them. And,
right.
then some.
Yep.
Well, it sounds like, honestly, if you could fit the mold, so to speak, it sounds like it was a really fascinating and exciting job for the both of you.
Yes, it was. It was.
I agree. What an experience. It was a far better education than I ever got in school. And even to this day, the little things that Mr. Hefner did, like when you joined, you got a key card, which is in essence a metal credit card, which we imprinted on our checks. When we approached that table, we had that person's name right there and addressed them appropriately, Mr. So-and-so, here's your scotch and soda, and the tips just rolled
in.
And more than that, to this day, when I meet a client, it's Mr. So-and-so, and you don't forget the name.
How about that? All right. Well, Suzanne, it was a pleasure to meet you. Do you two get together and do a little former bunny brunch ever?
Every once in a while, unfortunately, a long distance separates us. But that's the wonderful thing about being a bunny, because we have sisters all over the nation.
And we do have reunions every 2 years or so.
Ah, that's so sweet.
Very nice. Very nice.
Well, Suzanne Singer, it is so nice to meet you. And if you're ever in Chicago, come visit us. I'm sure Bill wouldn't mind if you came.
Come
in
on
the studio.
By.
Well, Bill and Wendy, it was a pleasure, and thank you so much for including me.
Thanks, Suzanne. We appreciate it.
Absolutely. What a lovely little relationship you had. You made new friends. It's kind of like a sorority, wasn't it?
It was, actually. And at any time, there were no more than 700 girls doing this all across at full capacity.
Yeah.
And with that, maybe they turned 3, 4, 5 times, and maybe there's only 3,500 girls in the whole world who did it.
That's it. That's a limited number.
Now, being a former bunny, you loved real bunnies as well. You seem to be a pretty wonderful animal lover, and you've written a book, Forces of Nature. After Hurricane Katrina hit, I remember the reports of all these animals that were trapped, and did you go out there and help?
I did. I was there. I went after Katrina and before Rita, and we were saving lives. We were doing what we could. The HSUS Humane Society of the United States headquartered it out of Baton Rouge, and we were given assignments by HSUS on what neighborhood to go to. And we did our best because there was no street signs, and we did what we could.
Mm-hmm.
And
this on your own dime, by the way. You paid for this.
Absolutely.
For you to go over and do this. Yeah.
Absolutely. Although I understand that they raised millions to help the people
good.
Afterwards.
Very good.
It's an admirable thing, because I know we love our pets. Some people don't have children, and they love their furry pets as their furry children. And now with Hurricane Matthew that just happened, this book is definitely pertinent. It's called Forces of Nature, and this is your account of going and helping out with the animals that needed to be rescued.
It is. Thank you so much. And the concern is ongoing, so if you have an opportunity, a couple extra dollars, please volunteer at your shelter. Make a small donation. Everybody appreciates it. And it's people like us who go to wars and to disasters and what have you. In fact, my own dog, Twister, is from Beirut. I was there when the Israelis were dropping bombs.
Wow.
It was a precarious situation. There was a city shelter in Beirut, mm-hmm. and the girls were hustling to get the dogs up to the animals up to the Syrian border, where they were stowing everybody in an abandoned pigsty. And so we did what we could, and we got everybody out and got them up there. And I assume they're still headquartered there.
Mm-hmm.
And there was one dog who really needed some help, so I brought
that was great. Very nice of you. Really quickly also, I know you have a business of your own that is thriving. Give a plug on the business.
Thank you so much.
Sure.
I appreciate that. I'm a private landscaper here in town. The company is On the Ledge, and we can be located at ontheledgelandscaping.com, where we do fabulous entrance urns and unique and creative arrangements and designs for your very own yard.
Pets and plantings, you and I are kindred spirits, except I was never a Playboy bunny. Never will be.
You could have been. You're so
That's
darling.
That's the first thing Joanne said when she came in.
She did.
Would you leave an application with us, please, Joanne? Please. Thank you.
So nice to meet you. Thank you for listening.
It's my pleasure. I am an avid fan and a listener on my own. It's such a pleasure to be here. Thank you for allowing me to tell my story.
And Forces of Nature you can get at Amazon.com.
All right, we'll take a quick break, and then the news, and then a lot more show. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Steve, thanks so much. It's Bill F. It's Wendy Snyder. You can call us or text us at 312-981-7200 anytime you want. Wasn't Joanne a nice lady?
I love her.
Very nice lady.
I'm telling you, and, you know, I'm sure that they had men ogling them and groping them
constantly,
and she mentioned that off the air. I wish we had more time with her, and that's how things were kind of back then.
Yeah.
I mean, seriously, when I watched vinyl, and it was the old days of radio, when it was just starting out, the rock and roll radio business, they'd do tons of blow, and it seems like everybody was jumping on everybody else.
Yeah.
That was then. Now, you know, we hold people to different standards because, you know, times have changed a bit.
Women were certainly objectified to no end back then. Things were a little more politically correct. I know some people think that's for the better. Some people think that's for the worse. But it's kind of a fact, as we've realized there is an equality. And, you know, hopefully
totally.
We've corrected some of the wrongs. Although it's really funny, almost with one exception, everybody I've talked to who had a place in the Playboy empire during that era has nothing but good things to say about those days. I talked to somebody once that was not pleased with her time there, but everybody else really remembers those extremely fondly whenever they go back to those years.
I mean, it was probably a huge status symbol for a woman to
sure.
be a Playboy bunny. Probably.
Sure.
It definitely was. And what's the difference with waiting tables somewhere else?
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, a little more skin is showing, but that's your choice. You know, if you got it, flaunt it. That's
yeah.
what I say.
Yes.
Someone texted 773, all the former Playboy bunnies need to get together and write about their experiences being a bunny. It would be a bestseller. I bet it would.
Mm-hmm.
Let's get behind that project.
All right. We're on it. Starting today.
Maybe you should.
I'll work on that. I'll have that
wings.
Done. It'll be ready by Christmas. Now, here's an interesting twist. But not certainly not a shock, but I think an interesting twist. Donald Trump, who is often...
Who's that again?
Donald Trump is running for the presidency, Wendy. He's on the Republican ticket as the presidential hopeful. He is not happy with the way he's being portrayed on NBC's Saturday Night Live and says it's time for the show to be retired. He is not happy with the way he's being portrayed at all. And he's talking about there's a media bias, that they're trying to influence the election. Saturday Night Live, of course, playing a large part in that.
Wasn't he on it?
He was on it less than a year ago.
Like in last November.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. First of all, if I may say something, if he is running for president and there's this neck and neck competition going on between he and Hillary Clinton, shouldn't he be more worried about things going on with the presidential campaign than Saturday Night Live? Where are his priorities?
I'm not sure. I mean, he, I know this is a big stretch, but if I were running for president, I don't know that I'd have 90 minutes to just sit back and watch an episode of Saturday Night Live. He was all over them as soon as the show was over on Saturday. He has this thing he likes to text late at night, not text, tweet late at night.
Yep.
So he's calling for the show's dismissal. He says it's time that the show is retired.
It's not funny anymore.
He loved it when he was on it 11 months ago, although...
What was funny that night?
Right.
I can't do a Trump, so I'm not going to even attempt it.
The night he was on it, it was the funniest show that's ever been, of course, but...
it was pretty funny.
On other nights. You know, they did a thing. They had him on the exact minimal amount of time. If he was on even a minute more... they would have had to extend an invitation to all the other candidates. And at the time, it was well into the teens. So they would have had to ask Carly Fiorina if she wanted to host.
Oh, right.
Rand Paul, if he wanted to host. Everybody, Ben Carson would have been your host 1 week. So they kept him on the exact minimum amount of time that a guy could be on network TV without them having to have his opponents also host.
And he poked fun at himself. He did a decent
bit.
Job.
A little bit.
He was Donald Trump. I'm not saying I don't mind watching him on TV. I just don't want to watch him on TV while he's sitting in the White House.
Right.
And now, did he say Alec Baldwin? Didn't he say Alec Baldwin does me terribly?
Yeah.
Nails it right on. And I will say I'm a little disappointed in this week's Saturday Night Live. The open was great. It was
the sketch about the debate.
The debate.
Right.
And they did poke fun at, that's what they do on SNL. They kind of over-exaggerate some of the things that happen at the debate.
That's what the show is built on.
Like him lurking in the background.
Right.
That was funny.
He played the Jaws theme, and he seemed like a shark, like a great white shark.
And, but they poked fun at Hillary more than I expected, actually. They really were making fun of her with her lean on the chair
right.
and just... very many things. So it was they were making fun of both of them.
It's not one-sided. It wasn't one-sided. Here's Donald Trump's tweet from the other night. Watched Saturday Night Live's hit job on me. Time to retire this boring and unfunny show. Alec Baldwin's portrayal stinks. Media rigging election.
I asked you this off the air. What does the media have to gain by rigging an election? How is the media rigging the election? And if the media was truly behind it, wouldn't they want Trump to be in office because it would give them more interviews, more audio? Wouldn't it be better for the media?
All right. I think to answer that, you have to look at the difference between them rigging an election and them being biased. Are they rigging the election? No. Is there a bias in the media? Yes, there definitely is.
But there's a reason for the bias.
What would the reason? Tell me what the reason is.
Because he's not acting like someone who should be presidential.
Right.
Honestly, that's my honest opinion. Now, there are people on his side that would say the opposite, and they do on my Facebook page all the time.
Oh.
And stop it. I'm going to drop everybody.
But are you shopping everybody?
Well, you know, no one is gonna agree on the political views in this atmosphere,
yeah,
because there is no reasoning or listening. It's like, you pick her, you're stupid. You pick him,
yeah,
you're
I
a
know.
Jerk.
I know.
No.
Do you remember the skit? Well, I will again reference Saturday Night Live. There was a skit in the election of 4 years ago where they had a bunch of people interviewing both Barack Obama and Mitt Romney. And all the questions to Barack Obama were softball questions. When he would answer the question, they would applaud and they talked about what a great guy he was. And then all the questions to Mitt Romney were very mean slanted and harder questions. So that was their way of saying, he's the media darling, Barack Obama. We love him. We're the media. We love him. It's all candy and it's all rainbow and lollipops. Without a doubt, in this election and in the last election and in the election before that, there has certainly been a media bias. The media, for the most part, not everybody, there's plenty of people on the right wing. Remember the lady who called up and said that she was listening to another radio show host and how he explained that Hillary Clinton opens the doorway for communism. He was explaining that Hillary Clinton is the president. It'll be a communist country. All right. So there are plenty of people on the right. Absolutely. But I think overall, the media is slanted toward, in this case, Hillary Clinton. It was Barack Obama the last election and the one before that.
But here's the difference. Barack Obama was the media darling.
Right.
He's a smooth dude.
Right.
First African-American president. I mean, he was the media darling. Hillary is not the media darling. No one really likes her that much.
She is
not a darling at all.
It'd be hard to brand her as a media darling. But of the two candidates, I think overall, if you looked at 100% of the media, in all sources, in radio, in television, in print, online, whatever, I think the bulk of them would be impossible to say that.
Because the option is scary.
Yeah, but yeah, it is. Both options are scary, but which is scarier?
And that's what it comes down to.
Right.
And I kind of feel bad for her. She could be the first woman president, and where's the hoopla?
There's little to none.
I know, it's not fair.
I keep thinking that maybe that'll change when and if she wins, that'll get a lot more play. I keep thinking, but I don't know. I think because of the sideshow of him being the Republican candidate, that storyline, which normally would be a major storyline, the first woman to become a U.S. president, that's taken not just a backseat, but it's in a trailer way, way, way behind the station wagon.
The word you just said right there explains it all, sideshow.
Yeah.
It is. Sideshow Don.
Right. All right. So I guess the question is, despite the fact that the media, for the most part, is siding toward Hillary Clinton, is that enough to influence the election? I mean, it exists. I'd love to hear from somebody who says, no, it's a 50-50 proposition, that the media's playing it right on the 50-yard line, because they're not. We're in the media. We're not.
Yeah, but if I was behind Donald Trump, I wouldn't be afraid to say it.
Right. Right.
I really wouldn't. And people say you're biased. We're not a journalist. We are here doing a talk show. I think the best thing we know how to do is talk about what we believe in. So if I was a Donald Trump fan,
you'd say it.
I totally would say it.
Of course.
Come on. All the Donald Trump fans are not shy about saying it.
Right.
I'm not really a Hillary Clinton fan either.
But so knowing all of that, do you think that if you're just an average citizen and you're influenced to some degree by newspapers, by radio, by TV, do you think that's enough to sway the election?
I don't think so. I really don't.
I think it makes you think harder, but I don't know. I don't know that it's enough to change the course of an election. It
would certainly make you. I think people have made up their mind kind of already.
Yeah.
I think right at the start, people made up their mind. There were a lot of undecided voters. Ken Bone, for instance.
Right.
Boy, he's in
whose
a turn
reputation,
of events.
His reputation has been slightly sullied. Would you agree with me? If you look at his Reddit quotes, he's something of a loose cannon, we find out about him.
He just is a regular guy who didn't think he was going to be put under the spotlight. So really, we all have skeletons in our closet, and it is Halloween time.
Right. His skeleton's wearing a red sweater.
It's cold.
It is cold. All right. Your thoughts on this. We would love to hear from you. We're at 312-981-7200. Question one, is there a media bias? I think there is. Question two, is that enough to influence the election? What do you think? Give us a call or a text. We're at 312-981-7200. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Donald Trump the other night sent this tweet out. It's brief. I watched Saturday Night Live's hit job on me. It's time to retire the boring and unfunny show. Alec Baldwin portrayal stinks. Media rigging election. That leads to a two-part question. Is the media rigging the election? Is that possible? Could you possibly be influenced or swayed that much by what the media says enough for you to vote for the candidate for the president? You tell us. 312-981-7200.
Valerie's on the line. Hey, Valerie.
Hey there, Wendy. How are you? Hi, Bill.
Hi.
I want to tell you, I have not been swayed at all by the media. What swayed me was all the words coming out of Donald Trump's mouth.
Mm-hmm.
He did it all by himself with his tweets and the things he says. It has nothing to do with the media. To me, the media just reports what he says. Is he on the TV a lot more and the radio? Of course, because the man is crazy.
Well, there is more to report on him than on her.
There is.
Ooh.
Yeah,
I mean, of course, it's sensationalism. But you didn't sway me in any way. No radio station or television station can sway me to choose my president, but the person can sure sway me.
And
I guess I'm just not one of the uneducated.
that he likes. He loves the undereducated.
All right, don't slam the other
like
people.
Me.
I know he said that, but you have your right-wing stations, and is Fox News kind of right-wing?
Kind of by a lot.
Okay, I've never, yeah. I don't watch it.
You couldn't be more.
Okay, so the people who watch that already have made up their mind.
Right.
The people
true.
Otherwise,
I would never, ever watch that.
Me neither.
Or would I, radio station. So, you know, that's only because I would rather listen to what I feel is unbiased.
Mm-hmm.
I think you guys are totally unbiased. I think I know who you like better.
That's it, better.
It's not that I think you love them and you're saying, oh, please vote for them.
I just want to have fun on the radio again, and I can't wait till after November.
Soon. Pretty soon.
Oh, me too.
Thank you, Valerie.
Valerie, thanks. If I were a Trump supporter, I would feel that it was unfair. The other day, I turn on my computer, I go to Yahoo, three of the top four stories are about Donald Trump. So I switch to MSN, where two of the top three stories are about Donald Trump. Then I go to Huffington Post, where all three of the top stories are about Donald Trump, each one of them painting him to be a bombastic buffoon, each one of them, right? So if I were a Trump supporter, I would certainly say to myself, well, how can you get a fair shake if the media, in this case, three online services, three that are kind of supposed to remain neutral aren't remaining neutral. They're taking slams at him from all directions. But as a guy that doesn't like Donald Trump, I say, yeah, but every one of those stories, and they were similar stories on all three sites, are accurate about things he has said and done over the last 24 hours. So you're trapped somewhere in the middle.
He's doing new. I know her email and Benghazi keeps coming up.
Sure.
Okay. But what is she doing now that's getting news coverage? He does something every day with his late night tweeting or early morning tweeting.
Right, right.
And he's saying it's rigged, and he's telling his supporters, you know, they just can't handle the truth, basically.
Yeah.
I'm paraphrasing.
Yeah.
And then, you know, what do we have on our hands then? A revolution? What's going on?
There's that.
If he wins, I'm not moving. I'm going to sit here and come to work every day and live where I live and go on with my life.
Right.
And say he's president of the United States. The people have spoken. I'm not going to do anything about it. If Hillary wins, I'm curious to know what some of the Trump supporters are going to do. I'm a little frightened by that.
Well, if he wins, she will be in jail, as he mentioned in the last debate. Saturday Night Live will be canceled because he doesn't want it to be on anymore. The world will change. There'll be a giant wall between here and Mexico. You know that. ISIS will be obliterated. You won't have to worry about ISIS anymore.
You know, the wall started with the Brady Bunch. They put the tape mark so you wouldn't go on that side of the room. That's where it all began. And look, that turned out badly.
Yes, it sure did.
Keep the Bradys together. That's my platform. Quick break. Eric Zorn coming in.
Yeah, we'll continue this discussion about the election and Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton with Eric Zorn of the Chicago Tribune next. It's Bill F. and Wendy Snyder on WGN.
Zorn, 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 the greatest father in all the land. Zorn, 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 we sing the praises of Zorn.
Wow.
It's my new theme song. Do you like it?
Yes.
That from the show?
It's from the show.
Beautiful.
It's from Son of Zorn, the new Fox show, which I'm depressed to report is getting really good ratings.
Why are you depressed?
Because I've told you, I do not want to be associated with this cartoon.
Tim Meadows is in it, right?
I don't know who's in it.
Jason Sudeikis is the voice of the of Zorn.
Yeah.
It's going to fly, man.
Oh, man.
We can play your theme all the time.
That's what
now.
I want. I've got a good theme song out of it, so I guess I can't complain.
Eric, before you came in, we were talking about Donald Trump, who had said over the weekend, it's time for Saturday Night Live to go away. He's not happy with the show. He thinks it's influencing the election. He says, media rigging election, ! In a tweet he sent out the other day. So Wendy and I were just discussing, does the media have the power to influence? It can certainly influence, but it can't decide the election.
Can't rig an election, no. Obviously, you have all kinds of candidates throughout time who have succeeded despite not being endorsed by the media. This is a pretty extraordinary moment, though. If you look at, I think, I haven't checked today, but the last I looked, of all the American newspapers, Donald Trump has one endorsement from a small paper in the San Francisco Bay Area, and that's it. Every paper, including many of them that endorse Republicans consistently, Cincinnati Inquirer, Arizona Republic, papers like that, have come out and either endorsed Hillary Clinton, or in the case of the Tribune, we endorsed Gary Johnson. USA Today, which doesn't even usually endorse candidates, wrote an editorial endorsing not Trump, basically,
right,
saying, you know, look,
anybody,
we don't care. We don't care who you vote for. Vote for Jill Stein, vote for Gary Johnson, vote for Hillary, but don't vote for Trump. So in a sense, he is right that the mainstream media is four square against his candidacy and against, you know, his what he stands for and what he's been saying. Is that rigging an election? Rigging an election to me implies some sort of an orchestrated plot.
Like you're manipulating the votes.
Like we would call up the Washington Post and say, "Well, what are you going to run today? Yeah. We'll run that, and you hit him on this, we'll hit him on that." You know, this idea of a conspiracy. There's nothing like that. This is just basically a wholesale rejection of his candidacy by just about every mainstream media outlet.
I was telling Wendy last night on HBO, John Oliver has a show where they review the week, and the point of this particular piece was to say to people out there, I know you think there's two bad candidates, and maybe you'll go rogue on everybody and vote for either Gary Johnson or Jill Stein, but you need to know this about Gary Johnson and Jill Stein. And then he showed a highlights or lowlights reel about their last couple of months or years, and it really makes you go, okay, so there's four people running for president that I'm not thrilled with.
Well, couple things about that. One, I did a piece on Gary Johnson a couple weeks ago saying, look, I mean, he stands for a number of things that libertarians are for, but he's getting support from a lot of progressives and liberals. I say a lot, but at the time there were like 29% of these millennial voters who were inclined to vote for Bernie Sanders had decided they were going to vote for Gary Johnson. And I just said, look, take a look at this guy's record. Take a look at what he's actually for. You know, what his record is. And if you still like that, then go ahead and vote for him. But don't be fooled that he's just like this, your friendly uncle who's actually on your side on a lot of issues. He's not. So, you know, it's one of those things where I think the closer it gets to the election, these people who are considering voting for third party candidates, especially in some of these swing states, are going to say, like, I'm not going to throw away my vote in such an important election on something that is totally symbolic. In Illinois, it's a little different. Illinois, it's, you know, strongly blue. It's going to go for Hillary Clinton probably 10-15 percentage points. Those who want to cast symbolic votes can probably feel pretty comfortable that they're not going to make a difference. But, you know, you don't want to get a situation like in Florida where, you know, you voted for Ralph Nader and you could have supported one of the two candidates that actually have a chance of winning.
This is the election of the crazy uncles and the crabby aunt.
Pretty much. Yeah, that's what they should call it.
That's really what it is.
Yeah, I'm not as negative on Hillary Clinton as a lot of people are. I mean, she obviously's got her faults. She's obviously, you know, got some issues. She's going to be a fine president, assuming she's elected. She's going to be, she knows how to work across the aisle. She knows how to work with Republicans. She did it when she was in the Senate for 8 years. She's really smart. She knows all the
issues. She is really
smart
and competent.
And she, you know, for better or for worse, she's very moderate. She like puts her finger to the wind all the time to figure out where to go. She's an incrementalist. She likes to move things a little bit at a time. She's not a radical as people are painting her. She's not out to grab everybody's guns.
She's not a communist.
She's not. And it's funny how they're portraying her someone. She's got her issues. I mean, and I think one of them has to do with this fact that she says what she thinks she needs to say to get elected. And she was, you know, was caught saying that in some of these leaked speech transcripts where she's saying like, well, yeah, you've got to have an inside position. You've got to have an outside position,
sure.
A position that you actually take when you're negotiating, the position you tell the public you have. You know,
but everybody knows that.
Yes,
exactly. Is it just seeing it in print that is jarring to some people? Everybody knows that.
It is. It's how politics works. It's how it's always worked. And she, in the second debate, I think it was, said, well, she was speaking of how Lincoln was able to do this when he was president, that he was able to, you know, play one side off the other and say one thing to one group, one thing to another group in order to bring them together to get something done. And, you know, obviously people were offended and had their underwear in a knot about mm-hmm. her comparing herself to Lincoln. But, you know, it's true. And I do want to get in a little bit to this idea of using these leaked emails. I mean, it's stolen material, and the media is just eagerly scarfing it up and,
sure.
and repurposing it and without even an ethical blink. But, you know, what you see is a series of leaks from WikiLeaks. They're coming out, and if they just wanted to dump all the data at one time that they have— You know, that's kind of one thing, even though it's all one-sided. They are strategically letting little bits of this out as it goes along. I mean, this is I don't know if it's coordinated with the Trump campaign, but it certainly seems to be aimed at helping the Trump campaign. That they're not, if they have all this data, they should just let it all go.
Mm-hmm.
But instead, they're like parceling it out a little bit at a time. And I think we're going to see it's going to get more and more incendiary, more and more controversial as we get closer to the election. And I think there's also a possibility that they have laid the groundwork for a hoax, that they have let out all these things that they have found. They've actually, you know, they've hacked into emails. There's no question about it. There's very little question. Most of the stuff they have is authentic. And most of the stuff they've put out so far has been real. But the fact that nobody really challenged, when these things come out, their authenticity is never challenged or seldom challenged by the media. We're just like saying, oh, WikiLeaks said this. Here it is. We're printing it. This is material that was stolen. It'd be like, you know, if I broke into Rahm Emanuel's house and went into his file cabinet, pulled out a file folder and went out on the street and said, look what I found in Rahm Emanuel's private journals or something like that. It's that much of an invasion of privacy. And yet there is absolutely no concern, ethical concern that I can detect in the American media about it. And there wasn't about the Trump's leaked tax return either, which is, you know, people were saying that, you know, that was private information that somebody managed to get somehow and leaked it to the media, and we just ran with it. Like, we'll just take stuff that's stolen and put it out there. And the Clinton campaign just lately has been saying, well, this is kind of like Watergate. What if Nixon had come out and
sure.
said, look what we, yeah, sure, we broke into the Democratic headquarters, but look what we found.
Right.
That would have been completely
right.
unacceptable. And this is unacceptable on that same level. I've been arguing anyway.
Look at the chess match that goes on behind the scenes with when exactly information is released. The Democrats knew that they had WikiLeaks leaks that were about to be sent out to the public, and that's exactly when they let out their information about the women who had come forth and said that Donald Trump had abused them to some degree.
I'm not sure that the Democrats were holding on to those cards. I think a lot of these women. Well, the stories that I've, you know, like the stories in the Washington Post about some of these women is that they heard Trump last. Was it Sunday night? It was a week ago yesterday.
For the second debate.
Where he said, you know, Anderson Cooper pressed him and said, have you ever done this? Have you, you know, the things that he had described in the tape from the bus.
Yeah.
That the Access Hollywood
Billy
tape.
Bush tape.
And have you ever done this? And he said, no. And he pressed him. He made him answer that question. And that women who heard that answer then decided to come forward at that point. I don't think these were, some of them may have been, I don't think nearly all of them were like in the Democrats' back pocket. I think they, you know, this was not something that they had been saving up for October.
Yeah.
Nothing tells me that
no.
From the interviews with the women so far. So,
if I hear one more Trump supporter say, why did these women wait till now to do it? Why didn't we hear from them years ago? It's very common that women don't speak out when they've been abused.
Right. Darlene Glanton has a very good column in this morning's Tribune about her experience being abused. And you we've had conversations here at this table. I've had conversations with a lot of women who will tell these stories. They go, well, yeah, I didn't tell anybody about it because I didn't think anyone would listen to me. I didn't think anyone would believe me. I didn't want the hassle. I didn't want the attention that's gone on. But then you look at some of this People Magazine reporter who came out with her story. Now, I don't think she's coordinating with the Democratic Committee. And you know, she tells her story, and this was back, what, I think it was 2005, 6, something like that. It was a while ago that this happened to her. But that, you know, she just, it's one of those things where, you know, and she's being shamed and attacked. And people say, well, why did women come out earlier? Well, because if there's not a critical mass, you get shamed and attacked when you try to make these allegations. Look what happened to some of the early women who came out about Bill Cosby. I mean, there was like this sense of like, oh, she's lying, she's making it up, she's a gold digger, she wants attention. And then finally, as we got more and more and more stories, we realized, well, wait a minute, there's a huge pattern going on here. And maybe these women are to be believed. But it's tough to come out and say that. It's tough to try to make an allegation like that because they do. I mean, Trump is saying, oh, there's no witnesses, nobody saw this. Well, of course there are no witnesses. You know, you have to be like a depraved monster to be doing this in public where people could see it.
And which of these women were the ones that Trump said at a rally, come on, did you see her? She wouldn't be my first choice. That's not the right way to handle that situation.
And why do people laugh at that?
I have no idea, but that's, I can't think of a worse way.
Has he looked in the mirror? Does he look in the mirror and think that he is
a prize?
He's God's gift
to
women.
He's a prize.
Good God.
All right, a quick break and then more discussion. If you'd like to jump in, 312-981-7200 is the way to do it. You can call us or text us at that number. It's Bill and Wendy along with Eric Zorn of the Tribune on WGN. It's Bill Leff and it's Wendy Snyder, and Eric Zorn is our guest of the Chicago Tribune. Less than a month ago, that's the good news.
It is the good news, isn't it?
What?
Although I think...
That's too soon. No,
didn't Trump tell his supporters they got to vote on November 28th?
Yes.
I think he did.
Yes.
I think he did. Maybe they should do
that. So just over a month ago.
I'm concerned. Trump. Are you guys concerned about what I would call the November 9th problem? Like, what's this country going to be like on November 9th?
That's what we were talking about.
No matter who wins.
Mm-hmm.
I'll live with it. If Trump wins, whoever wins, I live here. I'm proud to be an American. I'm not going
to
move.
Until he decides to turn off your frequency during between 10 and 2 every day.
Right.
The show's not funny anymore.
Lost the touch. When I back when I did stand up, I always wanted the goofier candidate to be the president because it was funnier on stage. Not this time.
Well, there was somebody who tweeted the true patriots in America are the comedians who are going to vote for Hillary Clinton.
Yeah, I know,
because they are the ones who are going to miss out.
I know.
Well, it has been a good season for political satire. And you mentioned John Oliver's show, Samantha Bee's show, which is every Monday.
Saw that last week.
Oh, her funny little bus ride was very cute.
Yeah,
she did a good
parody
job.
Yeah. Of it all.
And do you guys watch Seth Meyers at all?
I mean, every now
I love
and then.
Him. I don't watch it.
I've heard he's really good. It's just too late for me, but I may start setting my DVR because people are saying that he has really been spot on. So I got to get that. So
We're at 312-981-7200 if you have a call or a text. Any of them are good, Wendy, whichever.
All right, well, Dave, let's hear from Dave. Hi, Dave. Eric Zorn, Bill and Wendy.
Yeah, good afternoon. I was calling years ago. Colin Powell was asked to run for election. He said he wouldn't do it because even if he doesn't have skeletons, he's not putting his family through this. And, you know, I guess it's getting that way. Several people I know, it would run even for smaller elections, and they're like, we're not going to go through this. I mean, it's, why would you put yourself and your family out there to just be lambasted for any little reason? And, you know, you got to be perfect to, even if you are perfect, somebody's going to try and say something. So
well,
it's.
Yeah, and look what happened to that guy, Ken Bone. You talked about him
a little bit.
He was the doughy guy in the red sweater who asked
America's
the question.
America's sweetheart.
And then, you know, a couple of days later, people were, you know, prowling through his Reddit history.
Which isn't fair. He didn't ask for this fame.
And so they find out that he said some kind of strange things
about Jennifer Lawrence.
Jennifer Lawrence.
And parts of her anatomy.
Well, he saw the video. I'm sure other people saw it, too.
But I think that, you know, the caller's point is exactly right. Like, who would want to go through this?
That's why we have the candidates we have, I believe, Dave.
The other thing you brought up, too, is about the way Trump looks, you know, in reverse, where he says, oh, I'm not sure I want to go with that one. If anybody has put a picture of what he looked like before this election started and now, he is really aged.
He has. You know,
you can't put a lipstick on a pig. I mean, come on. I mean, he has really gotten
You can put orange pancake makeup on him. Right?
Dave, thank you for calling. Tom's on the line, too. This might be our last call. Hi, Tom.
Oh, hello. Good morning. Thanks for taking it. I'd like to address Eric. I'm a conservative. I almost always vote Republican. And then in the last 15 months, you know, I've called into the conservative talk shows that I listen to and basically calling them out. I'm a never Trumper from the beginning, and calling out the conservatives for their hypocrisy for in any way, shape, or form back at this guy based on his personal behavior and his policies. And, you know, I think I'm standing on pretty solid ground there. But by the same token, Eric, I read you all the time. I know you're a liberal, and I would call you out for your support of Hillary Clinton. I know you're partisan, and I got you there, brother. I get that. But here we have an election with two candidates that have such terrible personal problems. I'm voting for Gary Johnson. He's an imperfect candidate, but I think he speaks to a lot of issues that most Americans are concerned about, limited government. And, you know, maybe I disagree with his view on religious freedom and who you can marry, but I think he'd be perfectly acceptable for the country in a holding pattern. So I guess I just wanted to point that out, and I'd like to hear your response, because I'm a conservative. I really take aim at my conservative friends for what they haven't done over the last 14 months. So thank you, Eric.
Well, thanks for the call.
Thanks, Tom.
My sense, first of all, I'm sure that a vote for Gary Johnson makes perfect sense for someone like, you know, the caller, that the philosophies that Gary Johnson articulates, I think for people who are conservative and libertarian, makes sense. You know, I think that this was an election of a choice between Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump. That's realistically, you can, you know, cast a vote for someone else, sure, if you want. One of those two is going to be the next president. You know, I totally admit that Hillary Clinton has got her flaws. She's got things that infuriate me about her. As I said earlier in the program, she is going to be a fine president. She's going to work across the aisle well. She's not a radical. I don't think she's going to go into some sort of Nixonian cocoon. And I don't think, you know, like I said, I think she's going to be okay despite the issues that she has. Do I wish that more perfect people ran for office? Yes. Ran for president? Yes. We've said here around this table that Joe Biden probably would have been.
He would have been great.
He would have been a great candidate. He had his son die and couldn't mount a campaign. There are others who are probably promising, but, you know, I hear what he's saying, and I'm not, like I say, I'm not cheerleading for Hillary Clinton, but I do think that she'll be an okay president.
That's it, Tom. Thank you for calling.
I hope I'm wrong.
That's the attitude all Americans should take.
Yes, exactly.
This is America. We hope we're wrong.
Yes, yeah, very well said.
Eric, thank you so much.
Good to see you guys.
We'll take a quick break. We'll find out what Steve has on the Wintrust Business Lunch. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Kim, thanks so much. Hi, everybody. Part two of our Monday show. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. 312-981-7200 is our phone number if you feel like calling in or texting.
All right. I just saw you. We just had lunch together.
I remember you. Wouldn't it be tragic
God.
If I didn't? Yeah. Was that you?
You mean you were sitting next to me and you didn't know?
That was
know
you?
Me? That was
yeah.
Funny. We all went out to lunch together, and I just have to tell you, there were two guys. There was five of us, right?
Yes. There was you and me and Kevin, our producer, and two of our bosses. They like to come out with us every once in a while for lunch and get our opinions on things.
That's funny in itself.
Right? They throw us little riddles, little radio riddles.
What do you think
about this? Yeah. What if this happens? How should we handle this? What, in case of an emergency, what would you do?
Well, we went to a little order at the counter, then sit down, and they bring you your food place.
Similar to Corner Bakery. Wouldn't you say?
Very similar
to Corner Bakery.
And there is really only one big table that will accommodate over five or six people.
Right.
Correct?
A bunch of small tables
usually
sprinkled around.
Yeah.
Half a dozen small tables for two or maybe four.
Right. But we had, you know, five people, so we needed a bigger table. And there really is only one.
Yeah.
So as we're looking around, the one table that would accommodate us has two guys sitting at the end.
That's correct.
And there were six other seats available.
Right.
And
at least six, maybe more.
And we were kind of hovering because really there was nowhere else for us to go.
Right.
And so we sat down with them and they looked a little...
they were furious. We have this table. They didn't say that, but the look on both of their faces are like, we were here first. This is our table.
I kind of get that, you know, But if there are two of you, pretty much every table or little booth chair area will accommodate two.
Right.
Don't you take one of those tables?
I would have. They like to be spread out. You got that impression, right? They like to
spread their legs. Is it man spreading? Is that
what
it's
called?
Yeah,
there was a little bit of that. But the look that they gave us, like, hey, don't you understand? This is our table for right now. When we're done, you can have it. But that was weird because there were plenty of...
I know.
They could have certainly said, look, there's a two-top over there, and over there. We'll just slide over. That didn't seem to want to
do that. They were kind of averting our eyes.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, if had I been them, I would have been like, oh, my God, sorry.
Right.
Here, let me pick up my stupid salad trio and move over.
But there was a look on both of their faces of
like we put the
audacity of you to come to a table that we've already... claimed a stake to. It was a weird moment.
But then, like, think about it. At Benihana, you got to sit next to people. Ron of Japan,
right?
And at first, you're like, God, I hope no one sits next to me. And then, typically, someone sits
next to you,
and you kind of size them up and go, okay, whatever.
The other night, Terry and I were at a restaurant, and we got there kind of. It's prime time. It's Friday night, and it's prime time. It's 7:30. So on a Friday night, you're going to have a hard time just automatically getting a table. Well, there's two of us. There were two tables that were open, one that accommodated 6 and 8, you know, and we could have been sat at those tables. But we understand in the restaurant business, you save those tables for a larger party.
Yeah.
So we ended up waiting about 25 minutes for a table while those tables remained open. But I get it. If you're a restaurant, you don't want to waste a table on a pair of people like my wife and I, non-desirables. Why would you?
You guys are a couple of deplorables.
Can I also say, there was a time, and this has changed dramatically over the years, there was a time where reservations meant, if you made a reservation for 7:30, you come in at 7:30 and your table's waiting for you. I can't remember the last time that happened.
I can't. It doesn't happen at doctor's offices either.
No.
Why do they give you a time?
In a doctor's office, think about how unpredictable. I guess the restaurant business is also unpredictable and how long people are going to stay. But I get with a doctor, they're trying to structure some sense of, okay, we got a patient every 10 or 15 minutes.
And sometimes a sick person has to come in. But I usually like to get the first appointment of the day. Explain how they can be late for that one.
That's tricky. I don't know why that would be. But you're right.
All right, so no appointments. When I become president,
no more appointments.
I would like you just to live life willy-nilly.
Right. We saw them at the restaurant.
That's who was sitting in the
willy
two
and
seats.
Nilly. They were having a good time. Now, there's a conversation that we had during lunch that I thought, I hope you agree, would carry over nicely to the radio, and that is this. With the election just a month away, more than likely, one of the candidates will win. One will not, which would mean there will be a speech, a concession speech at the end. So I said, should Donald Trump not win this election?
And he still may.
He still may. But if he doesn't, I think what we will have on our hands is the single most interesting concession speech in the history of concession speeches. I think you could go to Las Vegas and bet on what will happen during that concession speech, because it could run the gamut from... Okay, what you're supposed to do with these speeches is we ran a tough election. It was a great campaign all the way through. Congratulations to the victor. Please give her your support. But it's Donald Trump, which means it could be anything else. It could be that, but it could be anything else.
I don't see him conceding. If
he loses,
he is going to demand a recount. Mark my words, Bill Leff.
There's a good possibility of that. There's a very good possibility of
that. They're rigging it.
He has already alluded to the fact that he believes that the election is rigged.
Alluded?
He has said point blank, the election is rigged.
But see, that's like if you're playing tennis against someone or something, you go, oh, well, I have a rotator cuff injury. You're making an excuse. So if you do lose, you have an excuse.
Right.
So that's all this is.
I can't even in my wildest dreams imagine what that concession speech. I mean, he could flat out refuse to make a concession speech, which rarely happens. It has happened, but it's rare.
Who has not conceded?
Not on the presidential front, but other politicians when a campaign is over, they just go, why bother?
Al Gore shouldn't have conceded.
He didn't really. I mean,
he unconceded.
Yeah, I guess. I don't blame him. That's still.
I know.
A crazy sore spot.
I know. I know. So what do you think that, let's say, this is a hypothetical, let's say the election happened, Donald Trump does not win, what do you think his concession speech would be?
Tune into my new cable channel.
And conversely, if Donald Trump wins, I can see Hillary conceding and doing what she's supposed to do, but she would have some choice words, I bet. You did this to yourselves.
Right, right. I'll keep my phone on if you need me. You know where you can find me. I wonder. I think hers would be okay. Hers would be entertaining.
She'd get some zingers in. Even though when they go low, you go high.
Right.
Sometimes you got to go low, too.
Right.
It's like the limbo.
Will the phrase, you've brought this upon yourselves, be used, should she lose?
Oh, we should do a bet. I don't think she'll say it as her concession speech, but I think she will say it the minute after, right. And then we'll be quoted as saying that.
How about this? Good luck, suckers. Do you think that'll be said at any point during her speech?
If that's what happened, I would love it.
That's her whole speech. She just goes up there, good luck, suckers, and she's gone.
Wait till you see what I email about you now.
Right, right.
Too bad my server's better.
All right, what are your thoughts on this? We'll cover this and other topics. We're at 312-981-7200. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
It's Bill and Wendy. We were talking about our lunchtime conversation, and election night is going to be one thing, and then at the end of election night, someone has to concede.
Yeah.
And what will Donald Trump's concession speech be?
If it is him that, in fact, has to give the concession speech.
Or what will Hillary's be
right.
as well?
Right.
That's just kind of curious. And Joe, what are you thinking?
Oh, hey, thanks for taking my call, guys. I love your show.
Thank you.
Thanks,
I kind of, maybe because this show has been out this year, but I'm drawing parallels to November 8th as similar to like an OJ verdict. Like the world's going to stand still to see what's happening. Two very, you know, opposed groups of people. And then, you know, it's just going to be wild either way. And I don't know.
That is the greatest analogy I've ever heard thus far. Honestly.
I mean, we got a big date coming up. That's going to be remembered for the rest of our lives.
I don't remember the world when the OJ verdict was being read. I don't remember the world watching, but in this case, the world is more affected by this than anything that's happened in the past. It just is.
Maybe just to correct you, Joe, the world was watching when the slow speed chase was going on.
Yeah.
I guess
that too
is true.
I mean, that show is out this year. I'm all into like that, you know, 20 plus year old story. But I mean, they're totally different things. But I kind of am, it's just a circus. Both of these things are a circus that is going to have a climactic conclusion.
And the campaign has been like the slow speed Bronco chase where you just go, come on, get to the end of this already. Well, now the end is near.
But where is Kato Kaelin? I wish he would have come up during this election process.
Yeah.
Maybe he'll be a justice on the Supreme
Court. Oh, now that is just scary.
That'd be great.
Thank you, Joe.
No problem. Thanks. Love your show.
Thank you.
We love you. And your crazy ideas. It's kind of true, though. And basically, more than everybody watching, there were just so many split feelings on the verdict.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's what's going to happen here. The world is divided, Bill.
With the OJ decision, it was very... And they even kind of talked about this a little bit in the miniseries that we watched. It was very divided by racial lines. I think this election, it's not only racial lines, there's other lines, but it's so funny how polarizing. I mean, every election is polarizing, but I've never seen anything like this. Have you even come close?
No.
There's nothing even remotely close to how polarizing this election has been.
So in my personal opinion, it doesn't matter who wins because the damage has already been done. The splitting up of America.
Right. So whoever wins, although, you know, I guess you could say that about the last couple of elections, but not to the point of what we're seeing this time around.
And what I don't like is the other parts of the world looking at us at this circus.
Right.
It's bizarre.
We had Rusty Richin, the comedian who's from Australia, a couple of weeks ago, and I talked to him after the show, and he was just saying they're reading in Australia, they're reading the story as though it were The Onion. Like they're looking at it going, they're making this up.
I walked by a restaurant in Ireland that was advertising the Trump burger.
What was the Chump Burger?
The thickest burger in Dublin, and their thick is a reference to stupid.
So filled with hot air.
So, I mean, it's ever, and it's, even when this summer when we were in Prague, they were selling, you know, Trump masks and things like that.
Yeah. So the rest of the world is looking at this as though, I mean, I guess we are here in the United States too, as though it's like, it's almost like a nightmare being played out before our very eyes, you know?
We're going to wake up pretty soon.
Well, one way or the other, yeah, in a month we'll wake up.
And my
Less
biggest...
Less than a month.
Yeah. Wow.
It's how, gotten how time to the, has flown.
It has, though. Remember talking about, first of all, Trump's running for president. Yeah, right. That'll happen. And then...
It was a... When it first happened, it was an improbable gag, right? Everybody just kind of went, seriously, he thinks he has a chance? And now it's down to two.
And he certainly has a chance.
Right. Right. Yeah. More than a... I mean... Really, it's when it's down to two, and I know people are going, no, it's not down to two. It's down to four or more if you're looking at the independent candidates. Realistically, it's down to two.
All right. Well, Mark, were you traveling overseas or something?
Yeah. Yeah, thank you for taking my call. I'm a big fan of both of y'all. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, I was, just real quick, right before the election in 2008, I was grabbed in the square in Santiago, Chile, in their capital square, just minding my own business. Unfortunately, no matter how hard I try, I look like an American when I'm overseas. I was over there helping an orphanage. And they grabbed me, and I was lectured about how I needed to vote for Obama. They have, in my opinion, the foreign countries think every election is a circus.
Well, then what are they thinking about this one?
Well, it must be worse, but I don't know how much information, like, because I remember when they, in 2004, Chile printed in their newspaper when Bush won a picture of him scratching his nose. I mean, it doesn't matter what you think of him. I mean, they just, you know, they just think it's a circus. Since I have the opportunity, this election, I'm voting for the other party for the first time. In my life, I'm 41, and I'm switching. So I feel that it's actually kind of uniting us a little bit more than dividing.
You do.
Just because I'm not voting for Donald Trump.
So you're putting your party by the wayside temporarily.
Yes, yes, and holding my breath.
We all are.
I love the theorists, and I've heard several people talk about this in the last couple of weeks, who talk about what Trump is now creating is the idea of a three-party system, that the Republicans would split off, you know, that he's not done with politics regardless of what happens next month, and it would create such a rift in the party that you would see that party split in two factions. I don't think it would be that drastic.
I think it's already happened.
Well, I believe if it does happen, I study, you know, a home politician buff. I believe that one of the parties of the Republican, you know, that split from the Republican will fold and we'll go back to the two-party system. It may be a different party, or they may behave differently even if they're the same name, but it'll rebalance.
All right. Well, thank you for your opinion. We're all waiting with bated breath to see what happens.
Yes. Thank you so much, Mark, for taking my call.
You're very welcome. All right, let's do this. We will break. Steve has the news. And then we have a lot more show, so stay where you are. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Wendy, what is your goal when selecting a Halloween costume? And you're supposed to select one, you know, where they're having a Halloween party here at the station.
I know, we've just been informed of that, and you have to dress up, too.
I'm not doing it.
Is that a costume thing?
Yeah.
Well, Judy Pylak loves to dress up.
Both on air and off. You know that, right?
Yes, I do.
Yep.
I feel really un-American saying this.
But?
I hate Halloween.
I hate Halloween.
Do you agree with me, Bertrand?
I hate costumes.
What is wrong with you guys?
I do not like costumes.
But can we qualify that a little bit? You guys, and I'm with you, I don't like to dress up either, but you hate them on ourselves.
Right.
But kids should certainly be dressed Halloween, right?
I can't wait till my kids decide what they want to be probably on October 30th, mm-hmm. and then I have to scramble and run to Goodwill and put things together.
It's
I love
tradition.
Making their costumes.
We were invited earlier this summer to an 80s party next door to us.
An 80s party?
Right. And so I just wore clothes that I bought in the 80s. And I go over there, and all these people who are, you know, 20 years younger are dressing up like all these fantastic characters. I'm like, no, this is nice. I bought this shirt in 1982.
All right. So why do you think all three of us are sort of in show business? Radio is kind of show business. Wouldn't you think we'd be the first ones to want to jump on this and go, costumes? Yes. Why are we all so opposed to it?
Because you hate fun?
We don't hate fun,
that
Kevin.
Is
Take
so
that back.
Not true.
It's just like a pretend thing. I'm not a very good pretend guy.
Maybe for a lot of people, it's their chance to kind of venture out and be somebody who they're not normally, but maybe because it's part of our daily, our life cycle to do that to some extent.
I just thought of my costume.
What is it?
I'm not kidding, but I have to figure out some way to do it.
What?
I'm going to be an open book because that's what I am.
Your life is an open
book. It is. I don't try to be someone I'm not.
Right.
I, you know, granted it was fun when you were little because the only
loved
way.
It.
Well, I didn't love it that much. I guess I did. I guess you got your costume and you were very excited and wore it before, you wore it out before it was even Halloween.
Yeah.
And, you know, in order to get free candy, you had to dress up.
Yep.
It's not that I don't want to look like a fool, because if you listen to this show, I'm not afraid to be embarrassed.
Sure.
There's nothing that says, hey, that's what I'm going to be.
Right. Before Kevin was our producer, Stephanie Menendez was our producer, and twice on Halloween, she would say to us, like a month and a half or 2 months early, we have to figure out what we're all going to dress as for Halloween so we can make like a theme show.
And we laughed in her face.
We didn't want to play. And now there's a big party here on Halloween, and we're certainly all going to attend, but I don't want to dress up. You don't want to dress up. Steve doesn't want to dress up.
And then the people who, not everyone, but many of those who do, they think they're so clever and funny and you have to get it, you know?
Right.
But it's fun to see people do that.
I'm a one-night stand.
Get it?
Like I'm a nightstand and there's one of me. I'm a one-night stand.
Do that.
No, he's mocking it, Wendy.
Yeah. Yeah.
I know. I think it's funny. I like looking at other people's costumes.
Nothing wrong with that.
I wear enough makeup every day. I don't need to.
And then you walk up to someone and they're dressed, you know, like, I don't know, whatever, Captain Hook. And you're like, oh, great costume.
Captain Hook.
That's, yeah, but if you don't dress up, people look at you and say,
oh,
you're normal.
Dress up.
Party pooper.
Right.
That's
exactly
what I should be.
That's why I don't go.
Be that.
I'm just going to get that emoji that has a smiling piece of you-know-what.
Be that.
And I can be a party pooper.
That's fun. Huffington Post has put out some last-minute costume ideas, and I will warn you, they say, here's what their criteria was. They want a last-minute costume idea that's in poor taste.
All right, I'm for that. Maybe I'll get an idea from this.
Wendy, would you like to be a sexy Scooby-Doo this Halloween?
For what reason?
I can't think of a reason, but they show a picture of it. And I don't know. I enjoy Scooby-Doo.
Does it turn you on?
Yeah.
Zoinks.
Zoinks, Wendy. You're like the sexiest Scooby-Doo ever. One of the best Halloween traditions involves destroying childhood memories by adding blatant sexuality to beloved childhood characters. This sexy Scooby-Doo costume does that in spades, as Scooby himself might say, rut-row. It's a dog costume, of course, in Scooby-Doo colors, that light tan color. And then the midriff is kind of cut out. There's two ovals on each side that are cut out because that's what Scooby-Doo would do if he wanted to look really sexy.
Not a bare midriff.
No, not
leave him wanting more.
Right.
So just two ovals cut out.
Right.
That's so stupid.
Like I can see your ovals.
Is it supposed to be a spot?
Yeah, I guess so.
How many spots did Scooby-Doo have? You should know the answer to this.
I don't know how many spots he had. I'm embarrassed for not knowing the answer to that.
All right, now, this is last minute, so do you have to go buy a dog costume?
Yeah, and cut some holes out to make it sexier.
Well, there's not going to be any costume Scooby costumes left.
I think there are. A couple years ago, when we were still shopping for the girls, that was a very popular. People from Scooby-Doo were very popular. So I'm sure that you can find one somewhere. You got a couple of weeks left. I'm sure if you worked on it now.
When the girls were looking for costumes, wasn't that movie out?
Yeah, I think the second
that might
one,
be
maybe
the
first or second one was
the
out.
Reason.
Maybe that's why.
Really, Scooby-Doo is, I know you love him. No offense, but he's not that popular.
But it's kind of old news.
Yeah.
the costume that I saw, now I have not worn a costume since I think my freshman or sophomore year in high school was the last year. They had a big Halloween party at my school, so I dressed up.
What were you?
Darth Vader. Sexy Darth Vader.
Did you have two Death Stars cut out of your black leotard?
Yeah. And I wasn't the only one doing heavy breathing. Everybody who saw the costume was too. All right, so I've not worn one since then, so I would have been 13 or 14 years old. So we're shopping for the girls, and we're one of those places that's usually it's an Amling's Flower World, but for the month of October, it's horror headquarters or whatever they're called. All right, so we're going through the different aisles, and we're looking for costumes for them. And they made, I don't know if they still do, but they made a Count Chocula costume that was outstanding. And I wasn't even thinking about it for Halloween. I'm just thinking, I'm sure that during the year, there's probably a couple times I need to go somewhere dressed like Count Chocula.
People would expect that from you.
Maybe I'm emceeing some benefit for some illness or something. Why dress like myself? Yeah. I would dress like Count Chocula.
Because you secretly would like to be Count Chocula.
Not
be
secretly.
Honest. Okay, then.
I'm not being secretive. I want to be Count Chocula.
Well, that's the perfect costume then, because we all try to be someone we're not.
Right. So I tried to convince Terry of that. I'm like, shouldn't I have a Count Chocula costume?
Why do you say these things out loud to her?
I don't know. She knows me. She knows
Please,
it's not going to happen.
Leave your thought bubbles in your head.
Here's one for the fellas, Wendy. Boy, this is a great costume idea, and it's easy to make, too. It's called a very special present. And what it is you dress like a lounge lizard, like a disco lounge lizard. But then you also have a mysterious box.
Like place. Justin Timberlake kind of in a box?
Yes. You place it in your midsection.
God. Why don't you just put a popcorn container there?
Oh, right. Like
what movie was that?
That's
it's not Diner, is it?
Yeah, it's
yeah
Diner.
It is Diner. That's what you should do. Why don't you come like that to the party here? Just tape a popcorn box
All
down
right.
there.
He won the bet.
Oh, that's a great costume.
All right, see? Now you have to help
me find one.
I'm
covered. All right, I'll find one for you. Oh, here's a good one. It's called the Drooper's Waitress. So it's kind of a parody on all the places like Tilted Kilt or Hooters.
Okay.
But they show a man wearing it, and he's a little bit on the saggy side. And it says, if your plan to appeal to women consists of dressing up as a waitress from Hooters, you could be in for a rough go of it. There is a way to spin it so you don't come off looking like a sexist creep. I doubt that. I think if you're dressed like this,
pretty
you're
going to
look like a
creepy.
Sexist creep. All right, so you dress like this. So what they have is they show a guy wearing this, and it's a wig that makes your hair look real high up, and then it's sparkly glasses, and then it's a T-shirt cut right to the area where your breasts would be. And then he also has a serving tray with shot glasses on it and very short shorts. But remember, just because you're wearing this, Wendy, as it points out here, you may want to avoid people thinking you're sexist if you're wearing this. So they suggest you say this. This costume is my way of protesting the objectification of women in our consumer culture and the way major corporations force young females to parade their bodies around to sell their bodies. It also honors the beauty of all women, no matter what their age or body type.
I would kick that guy out of my party in about 10 seconds. First of all, for the outfit. Second of all, if he said
speech?
That.
Right. The speech is a little damning, isn't it?
Yeah, and if he's really going to go through the saggy droop along or whatever that is.
Yeah.
You should take pantyhose and fill them up with cotton or something so hanging,
Make
you know, covering your toes. Yes.
Right. That's a good idea.
I should be a costume fashionista.
Why aren't you? I don't understand why you're not. All right, we have a couple more of these. These are last-minute yet offensive costume ideas.
I just ordered a popcorn box for you.
Did you? Thank you. Thank you very much. Sweet corn, I hope.
Oh, God. You are very conceited.
We'll take a quick break, then a quick meeting with HR, and then more show, Bill and Wendy, WGN. It's us. It's Bill and Wendy. Halloween just a few weeks away. Over at Huffington Post, they're offering you ideas, last-minute costume ideas. The one caveat is they say that they need to be offensive. They're looking for last-minute offensive costume ideas. Do you want to offend somebody? Try one of these. This I don't find that offensive. It's a guy dressed as a giant light switch. And
turn
then it
me
says,
on.
Turn me on top, and then the switch is up, and turn me on, yeah. That's not offensive.
It's stupid. It's like a third grader would right. wear that.
This light switch costume is perfect for people who aren't good at expressing their emotions verbally. Now you can let people know how you feel about them by just clicking your switch up or down. No one's feelings will be hurt if you keep the switch turned off. They were turned off by this costume when you walked into the room, it says.
Yeah, that's bad.
Yeah. You're right. It is the kind of thing.
It's just stupid.
Right. Giant light switch. Here's another one that's not that offensive. It's an adult inflatable baby costume, and they just show a guy wearing a diaper, and then the rest of it, it looks like skin, but it's not. It's like felt or something. I don't know. Is that offensive? I don't think it is. Sexy cat in the hat. Like what? You can think of Cat in the Hat without thinking of how sexy the Cat in the Hat is.
Well, instead of the hat being curved, it's straight up.
That's the difference, right? Yeah. Right. This one I don't understand. This is a last-minute costume idea that they say is sure to offend people, but I don't understand it unless I'm missing something. The floating dead rubber duck. So it's a rubber duck. The T-shirt says dead on it, so you know for sure that it is a dead rubber duck. The eyes look like they're zombified. The hair is slicked back.
Oh, like Walking Dead, because I'm like, aren't most rubber ducks dead?
Yeah, they're all dead. Why should human zombies have all the fun?
Go.
This zombie-themed rubber duck shows that we need to fear the floating dead as well as the walking dead. Really?
Fear the Walking Dead has some floaters in it.
Right. Yeah,
just
be all
a
right.
floating zombie. Make a big aquarium around yourself
oh, yeah.
and put yourself in water.
All right.
Ruben, why should we dress up? Where are you?
I'm in Ecuador in South America, and I'm listening to you every day, and I love your program.
Thank you, Ruben. You're very nice. Thank you.
So, why should we dress up?
Because it's fun. I mean, this is a Catholic country. It's very religious, and many people are against celebrating Halloween, and even, you know, some politicians say that that's an American celebration, but it has nothing, I mean, children do not think about religion, it's just about fun, it's the custom day, it's the fun day, it's the crazy day. I mean, I don't think there's any other celebration or any other day when they can dress up in the craziest way, so it's about having fun.
Ruben, what is the number one Halloween costume in Ecuador this year?
Donald Trump.
It is Donald Trump.
Really?
Oh, yeah, you just get a blonde wig and then some type of suit, even if it's not real, and a tie, and then you do this movement with your lips and a piece of cake.
Little scowl. Of
course.
You make your lips curve downward.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He never smiles.
Yeah.
Hey, Ruben, how's the Wi-Fi in Ecuador? Because you're obviously listening on your computer or the WGN radio app.
Usually I listen to you. Right now, I'm watching you. Wi-Fi, it's okay. I mean,
I'm going to wave to you. We're waving to you. We're waving to you right now.
Oh, yeah. Well, I've got a delay right now with the video, but I can see you. I love your voice, Wendy, let me tell you. I was in Chicago, for your information, for the first time in my life. Like 3 weeks ago, I was on my way to a conference in Kansas City. And, one month before getting to Kansas City and Chicago, I started listening to the radio to see what was going on in Chicago and the weather. But the problem is that 3 weeks had happened. I'm back in my country, and I'm still listening to you guys. And I've got to work, so I don't know what to do.
You should quit your quit job. Work. Yeah, stop working.
I like your voice, Ruben.
Oh, here we
I
go.
I love how you call it a program.
Yes.
Now it's you waving. You see, I've got this delay, so that's why. Well, thank you very much for getting my call, and I wanted you to know that you've got a fan here in Ecuador, South America, and your program is so cool, and I'm hooked up with you guys. I need to make decisions because I have to keep up working.
Well, we're sorry about that, but we're thrilled that you're listening. Thank you, Ruben.
All right. Thank you.
Take
See
care.
You. Bye.
Hey, Ruben. Call us every once in a while and give us like little updates from Ecuador. We would love to talk to you. We'd love you on our program.
Oh, thank you very much. Of course I will.
All right,
do it.
Thanks, Ruben.
Ecuador is listening to WGN.
Goal! I thought that's what you said in that situation.
Thank you,
I
Ruben. No, that was perfect.
I think that's what you say in Ecuador.
What a nice guy, Ruben.
Very nice guy.
We're multi.
We're doing all right in Ecuador. That's important. Huh. All right.
That's exciting to me. Although he was stalking me, it sounded like a little bit.
A little bit.
That's all right. I welcome all stalkers.
Make sure your Ecuador doors and windows are locked when you go to bed. All right. Should we take, there's other calls with other great ideas if you have a last minute offensive costume idea. You're judging by the titles.
Hi, Terry.
I wonder if this will be okay.
Hi, how are you?
Hi, good. Terry.
What's your idea?
Okay, I did this for my mother because she used to dress up for work every year. And she used to win first prize for all costumes I did for her. One year, I went in the back of the closet and I found this crazy dress. You had to be higher than a kite if you would have worn this thing because it was yellow and orange and purple. So it looked like something from a hootenanny back in the 60s or something. And I put this on her, which is a giant safety pin, and hiked it up and pinned it around her up so it's like a slit. I had her make sure her slit was showing. She had knee highs, one up to the knee, one wrapped around her at her ankles. And then we had crazy shoes that looked like somebody painted them. And then I had my husband go get a tree branch, and we took cobwebs and wrapped it around the tree branch. She had this wig on, and we put a bow in her hair.
A bow in her hair.
What was she?
You're breaking up. So what was she?
Okay, hang on. Okay, and then we put the sash on her. She was, and the letters were all backwards and crooked. She was mess. America.
Mess America, Wendy. Yes.
That's what America is right now. It's a big mess. I like that.
And then she went trick-or-treating my daughter, and my daughter was Miss America.
Ah.
So Miss and Mess America. Terry, those are some great ideas. I'll look in the back of my closet or in the back of Bill's closet. Thank you for calling, Terry.
So Ruben calls in from Ecuador. The sound quality is second to none.
I know.
Terry calls in from Northbrook. You can only understand one out of every six words she says.
It's crazy.
How is that possible?
Mess America. That's what it is.
That's it. All right. We'll take a quick break. Steve has the news, and then we have more show. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN. It is Bill and Wendy, number one in Ecuador.
Riva.
Rebox.
I could listen to this all day, can I tell you?
This is beautiful. Would you translate the words for me, Wendy? I don't know what these words mean.
Big fan of Bill and Wendy.
Yes.
Keep going. I listen every day. Because Bill's a man.
Yeah.
And Wendy's a lady. That's not true.
I don't know if that's true. But still, numero uno in Ecuador, Bill and Wendy. Bill E. Wendy. Did you see this story over the weekend about a plus-size model, very successful plus-size model, Rosie Mercado is her name, in keeping with her Ecuadorian theme. Rosie Mercado, a plus-size model, who lost nearly 250 pounds. Didn't lose her job, but lost her fan base. People were furious that she lost weight. They did not like her losing weight. Rosie Mercado, very pretty lady, by the way. Very pretty. Rosie Mercado, a plus-size model who has been in the modeling industry since 2009, lost, as I said, nearly 250 pounds. She explained this to TMZ. She says, "I'm still plus-size. Can you believe that? Even after losing 250 pounds. Wearing a leather jacket, a black turtleneck, dark cat-eye frames," which she stole from Amy Goose, by the way, "and a round-brim hat, she confessed in a video filmed at the airport that she doesn't miss anything about being so heavy." Here's what she says. "I think I was grateful that I got to be 410 pounds because it taught me a lot of lessons," she said, noting that she learned humility, how to treat people, and to never judge a book by its cover, and persistence. What may be hard to believe, though, is that as Mercado began to shed pounds, again, nearly 250 of them, she started to gain haters. "I think there's a group of people that resented that I was losing weight because they thought that diet equals being a size zero, and diet for me really equaled a lifestyle change. It equaled freedom. It did not equal a size. Specifically, fat activists sent her hate mail. They told me to go jump off of a bridge and to kill myself," she confessed, positioning that they may have hated the fact that she was really public about her weight loss, speaking out about it, and then sharing her progress on social media. So does that fall into the bracket of jealousy? What would that fall into the bracket of?
I mean, they identified with her because maybe they were overweight and they saw her as a role model. Look, she's a plus-size model. She's 410 pounds. I could do that if I wanted to.
Yeah.
And then she shed all the weight, and perhaps they're jealous, but those are terrible things.
Jump off a bridge, kill yourself. Mercado started to change her diet and exercise.
And it is a lifestyle change. I mean, you know, for people who have lost weight on a diet, when you go back to your regular lifestyle,
right,
you're going to put it right back on. So,
but is there any other job where you could lose that much weight and have people that were fans of yours just turn on you? I can't imagine a situation where you would just go, I used to really like her, but now
one word.
What?
Oprah.
Oh. Yeah, I guess so.
It totally happened.
But did people hate her because she lost weight?
Some people did, and some people said she looks funny. But we were used to seeing Oprah one way,
yeah,
and then when she shed all that weight very rapidly,
yeah,
and pulled out that wagon of meat, or
remember
fat,
that?
Actually.
Yeah.
And she
That's
said,
my Halloween costume, by the way, wagon of meat.
It was fat. It wasn't meat. It
right.
was a wagon of just fat.
Right. Yeah, I guess
it was very impressive to see how much fat she had lost.
Yeah.
But people, I'll never forget people going, oh my God, she's too thin. Everybody, you know, when you're used to seeing someone a particular way and then
right.
you see them differently, it happens a lot with people that lose weight. Oh, you're too thin. Really? I'm not.
But would you ever, like, all right, let's say you were under that belief that, oh, I liked Oprah, or in this case, this woman, Rosie Mercado. I liked her better when she was big. Would you be so bold as to send her hate mail or tell her she should kill herself? That seems
And
so
if
excessive.
I liked who it was, like I liked Oprah, I like my Oprah anyway.
Yeah.
I really do.
Right.
I don't watch her show. I don't listen to her radio network, but I love Oprah.
Yeah.
There, I've professed my
right.
love.
She's hoping for a little more loyal fandom. But
right. I know.
I love you, Oprah, but your show is not for me. I don't care for your show.
It used to be. I mean, that's what I loved about her. She was
well. Now
just
it's
so...
on a different. It used to be very easily accessible
yeah.
on Channel 7, and now you'd have to search to find the
it's
network.
A whole different wavelength.
Right.
I do subscribe to O Magazine.
Who's on the cover this month?
O.
Is she on the cover this
mm-hmm.
month? Despite the hate, Mercado only has good things to say. She's keeping a very positive attitude. Everybody loves to be happy in their own way, she said. Some people love being overweight. Can I be honest with you? I know some people that are overweight, and they have no idea to change that. They're fine with it, and you know, it's up to everybody, right?
To each his own.
I know you can argue that it's healthier for you, and that you'll live longer if you weigh less. But
usually, that's true. There are healthy overweight people.
There are.
There are unhealthy underweight people too.
Right.
Don't judge. Just be however. Although there are people that say, oh, I'm happy being this way, and maybe they're not.
I'm sure that there's plenty of people in that bracket, too. But, you know, you and I have had discussions on the show about weight, and what happens invariably is people call up and they say, I've tried everything to lose weight, and I can't. I mean, everybody's metabolism is different, and of course, there's other contributing factors, but sadly, the reality is there are plenty of people who want desperately to lose weight and just can't.
And they don't know how to do it. And think about it. You know, when you quit smoking, you give up cigarettes forever. When you quit drinking, you give up alcohol forever.
Yeah.
You can't give up food forever.
No.
So it is a complete, you know, it's portion,
right.
portion, portion. That is
right.
the most important thing.
Right. Mercado says some people love being overweight. Some people don't. I think it's a personal choice. There's good and bad that comes with any life choice and the changes, so you know you have to let it go and not pay attention to the negative remarks. I'd be furious if I... It's not easy to lose. Like I said, she came close to losing 250
That's
pounds.
That's amazing.
All right, so think about those sacrifices and all that work to lose it, and then you're getting emails and texts every day from people who are mad at you for doing that.
Well, you know what's weird is she said even after losing that weight, she's still a size 12 to 14, 170 pounds. So technically, she still is a plus size model.
Right, right.
But you look at her and you would, I mean,
she doesn't
I think
look-
that's a slam, by the way. Why does it have to be a plus size model? Why can't it just be, hey,
a model.
You're a model?
I can't say for sure, but I think the modeling industry itself segregates.
Didn't Cheryl Teagues get mad about that or something?
Yeah, who?
I think it was Cheryl Teagues.
It was Cheryl Teagues, but who was she? She was upset with some model.
Yeah, who was that?
Who was it? It was some fairly well-known person that she said that this is bad for the modeling business.
The Sports Illustrated girl. Ashley Graham, her name?
Oh, yeah, I think it is Ashley Graham.
It's like, I've worked so hard. No, you just gave up eating for a while and probably smoked 100 cigarettes a minute to keep your weight down, because it seems like that's what models did years and years and years ago.
Yeah, I guess so.
And shame on,
it was Ashley Graham.
Yes, Cheryl Teagues criticizes Sports Illustrated for putting full figure model. But it's like all of a sudden you had actors and actresses, and if you notice now, everybody's an actor, regardless of your sex.
Mm-hmm.
Why isn't it just a model? Do you say like a hand model? Which, by the way, great work.
Hand modeling?
Yeah, you did a great job in the JCPenney catalog.
Thank you. Very nice.
I really enjoyed it.
The next time you are looking for mittens, think of me, because I devoted my life to hand modeling. You got to admit, I mean, look at them.
They look better in mittens. Got to be honest.
Don't you think?
With you.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, thank you. Thank you. All right. We'll take a quick break. If you want to jump in on this, we would love to hear from you. We're telling you the story of this woman. Beautiful woman, Rosie Mercado, dropped nearly 250 pounds and received hate mail because of it.
It's
hard to
so
fathom,
wrong.
But true. What are your thoughts? We're at 312-981-7200. Back after this, Bill and Wendy, WGN.
It's Bill and Wendy. We're talking about a plus-size model, Rosie
Mercado.
She lost 240 pounds, and people are being mean to her.
Yes,
she lost her fan base as well as weight.
Very upsetting. You wouldn't think that'd be the case.
But I have a question. Why do you have to say a plus-size model? Why can't you just say a model? Patrick would like to answer that, a very brave man. Go ahead, Patrick.
Again, because whoever designs and came up with the sizing for women is just a ridiculous knucklehead. Starts at size zero, if I'm not mistaken.
It's unrealistic.
So right off the bat, it goes, what, zero, two, four, six, whatever. And then, boom, once you're over 10, you're plus size, if I'm not mistaken.
Correct? Is 10 the cutoff?
I don't think 10 is the cutoff. And
no,
she says she is a 12 or 14.
Right. So
that isn't really plus size.
Right, it's not, but much according to women's sizing, it is, you know, as far as dresses go.
But you don't have to go to a different store for a size 12 or 14.
But still, that's a plus size. I'm just telling you how it is. Like,
you sound very nervous, Patrick.
I got a wife and three daughters, and I've got five older sisters. So I've done a lot of dress shopping and clothes shopping.
Poor thing.
It's literally ridiculous. Like, you know, just the sizing is, it's like degrading to women right off the bat.
And you know what they've done lately too, Patrick, is there's a particular jean company that I love, and I've been wearing their jeans, and all of a sudden I wasn't fitting in the size that I had, and I did some research. They were making the sizes smaller, so you'd have to go up a size. Now, wouldn't you think they'd do it opposite?
Yeah,
so
of course.
So you'd feel like, oh, my God, I'm in a size 2.
Yeah.
Right, but again, you just nailed this, you know, the nail on the head. If you go to look for a pair of jeans, if you go from one brand to another, do you not have to go different sizes?
Yes, frequently. And that's why I just...
Bill, when was the last time you had to go look at a different size for a different brand of pants?
Like Levi's, or 36, like 34 Levi's, or whatever, and that's what that is.
Wranglers, right.
Exactly. Pretty much.
It's a straight fit, it's a straight fit. If it's a boot cut, it's a boot cut. There's no tighten the hips.
Right.
No deviation, really.
There's a little bit, but nowhere really, near what women go through. There's a little bit.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
And, you know, I just want to thank whoever convinced women to start wearing yoga pants on a daily basis. My hero. I love them.
Thanks,
Patrick, you're a great guy.
Beautiful women. And to me, to have a plus-size model is ridiculous. It's a model.
I agree with that.
She's a beautiful woman. She's a model because she is hot. Not because she's a plus size and she's hot. That's ridiculous labeling. We do a lot of ridiculous labeling in our society, but that's just one of the few. And that lady lost more than I weigh by 50 pounds.
Oh, all right.
So she lost a person and a half.
Yeah, she did.
Well, for them to, again, five sisters, a couple of them have been heavy. When they lose weight, like you said, Wendy, it's a lifestyle change. It's not just like...
It's not a quick fix.
Yeah,
I would like Patrick to run for president. I would like to vote you into the office because you are not objectifying women. You are accepting of women and understanding.
Do you have any embarrassing tapes with Billy Bush, Patrick, that we should know about now?
Well, we can't talk about
that. All right. That's a secret. All right.
Well, thank you.
Take care.
That call, by the way, coming from Ecuador.
I don't care. He's so right. And the sizes have totally changed. There was a girl who used to wear a zero, which I don't think I did even when
size
I was a
zero.
Fetus.
Right.
And she went to this particular place and had to get a size 2.
Yeah.
So that messes with your head. Why wouldn't it go the opposite way?
Oh, that does make more sense.
All right, Pam, you're our last call on this.
Okay, first of all, the size 0 and size 2, these young teens just, like you said, they are just devastated when they have to go to a 2. And
I know, it's terrible.
Bad. Yeah, that's just bad for young girls to think about themselves that way because they're tiny to begin with. But as far as the weight in actresses and or models, I think it was Melissa McCarthy who lost her job on Mike and Molly because she lost too much weight.
Where did you read that?
I in a magazine, so I don't know if that... But when she lost all that weight is when she left the show.
It's just so you know, and a lot of people believe this, Pam. That had nothing to do with it. It was already scheduled that she was going to leave Mike and Molly. She had a contract in place. She lost the weight because she wanted to be in more movies, and she knew her chances were better of playing a romantic lead if she dropped a couple pounds. It was a bold move.
Is unfair when you think about
it's very
too. But
unfair.
That's Hollywood.
It is unfair,
and that is Hollywood. And you know what? Mainly, most of all, for any of these ladies losing weight. Number one, if they feel good, God bless them. And number two, it's healthier for them. I mean, you know, you may be 20, 30 pounds overweight, and it'd be nice to lose 10 or 20 pounds. But when you're 100 pounds overweight, it's a health issue.
That's true. So she was 410 pounds. So I get it.
Yeah,
guess at that point, that
it's
is
dangerous.
A big health issue.
Yeah.
A big health issue.
Thank
so,
you, Pam.
Thanks, Pam.
You
know,
okay, take care.
When I was doing stand-up, I can't tell you how many guys over the years, there were some guys who, you know, would be bigger, overweight, heavy-set guys, and the bulk of their act, most of their material was about being a big fat guy. And then a couple of those guys lost weight. John Panette's one of them, a friend of ours, John Panette, lost a ton of weight. And then he even said, it was almost challenging going on stage. Not only do you have to write a whole new act, you can't be the lovable fat guy anymore. But everything about you is different because you don't stand out all of a sudden. Zach Galifianakis is going through this now. I just
totally
saw clips
thin,
of him
yeah.
in this movie with John Hamm. He's almost unrecognizable.
I know. He's very trim.
Yeah.
But it's, you know, you look at him and you go, boy. Now, Zach Galifianakis, I just think is adorable either way.
He is.
But with John Panette, I know so many people said, oh, he looks so thin. So because you were used to seeing him another way.
Right. Jonah Hill's another one who talks about how Hollywood was looking at him as a different way. He was kind of pigeonholed as that big overweight guy, and all of a sudden he wasn't anymore. So I'm sure it affects your business, but for this lady to receive hate mail because she lost all
ridiculous.
That weight. All right, we'll take a break, and then we have more show for you, so stay where you are. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Steve, thanks very much. Wendy, I'm just curious. Last night was a very big baseball game, Game 2 of the Cubs and the Los Angeles Dodgers.
Baseball game,
NLCS.
It was a pitcher's duel.
It was a pitcher's duel.
Are you proud of my baseball?
Yeah, look at you. Look at you. A total of 5 hits, 3 for the Dodgers, 2 for the Cubs. Not a lot of hits in the game, but you had 2 of baseball's premier pitchers going up against each other. Did you see any or all of the game?
I did see the tail end of it, and it was disappointing.
It was. Rick Tellender, I was reading his column in the Sun-Times earlier, and he titles it, "You Were Expecting a Sweep." No.
I don't think anyone was. I mean, although it was pointed out to me that when... See, this is where Jimmy Mack is the devil on my shoulder.
When the White Sox won.
They only lost one game.
Right. Throughout the whole playoffs.
Right. But again, honey, that was 2005.
That was the last game they won, too, I think, wasn't it?
Probably.
Last World Series that they won.
No, they have not done very well.
They've won a game every here and there.
I know it's getting old, and people are sick of me saying this. Not a Cubs fan, but this team really deserves to win. And I didn't expect them to sweep. I don't think anybody else really did either. There's going to be a lost game now and again.
This guy, I know you don't follow baseball as closely as I do or as Steve does, but Clayton Kershaw, who pitched for the Dodgers last night, aside from having a fine mullet, he really is one of the wizards of baseball.
He's really top of the heap.
He's always good. He's won 3 Cy Young Awards already.
Well, then what is anybody expecting?
So
a hit or two?
A couple more hits would have been nice.
Although I will say, watching it, there were some strikes called that weren't strikes a lot.
The umpiring was a little substandard.
Seriously, I know I'm on my couch and I'm a armchair umpire.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you could see that.
Ninth inning alone, Chris Bryant, the first pitch to Chris Bryant wasn't just inside and low. They even showed it on, you know, they do that thing where they show you the square of what the strike zone is. It didn't even come close.
I know.
It wasn't even a borderline. It was missed. So as they illustrated last night, and I'll hopefully further illustrate, even though it's just one pitch, it puts you at a weird disadvantage, especially late in the game when you're down by one, because then you're thinking to yourself, okay, if he called that one a strike, what else is he going to call a strike?
And that totally gets in your head.
Yeah,
it totally does.
But they're big boys, and they won more than 100 games, and they'll be fine.
I think so, too.
All right, who were some of the celebrities cited at the games? Did they show a lot of
them? Yeah, you will not be surprised to know that Bill Murray has been at every game, I believe, so far.
Who are you going to call?
No, I heard he's wearing a shirt. He's wearing a shirt that says, "I ain't afraid of no goat."
Yes.
Yeah, who are you going to call Goat Busters? It's right. Really funny.
And then he was criticized. I told you this in the last round of the playoffs. One of the guys on FS1, that's Fox Sports 1, said he was criticizing Bill Murray because he thought he spelled it wrong on his shirt. Like he wasn't aware of the. Yeah.
That doesn't surprise me at all.
He didn't get that. We've had a little issue with a goat here in town. He had no idea.
Those guys are, you know, I was thinking about this because they're not very entertaining, I don't think, the announcers.
The Fox Sports 1 guys?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's because great announcers recognize great moments and accentuate them.
Yeah.
And those guys are trying to create great moments by their description, you know?
You know.
Like, that's the best foul ball we've seen in game 2.
Right.
Rather than just highlighting what's already existing.
I like Joe Buck a lot, and I think John Smoltz is doing an okay job doing color on the games. I really like, they had Costas do one of the games
in
round one.
He's the best there is.
Bob Costas is
really
good.
And Doc Emrick.
And Doc Emrick, if it was a hockey game.
Although he called the Pirates game, didn't
he? Yeah, he did. He called a little bit of a Pirates game. And I've always been a big fan of Al Michaels. I wish they'd bring Al Michaels back to do these games because he really does a nice job. I mean, there's other great announcers. These guys have their moments. They're not as solid as you might like.
I'm not a Joe Buck fan.
Don't like him?
Was that Joe Buck last night?
Yeah, wasn't it?
Was it?
I didn't think it was.
It was for game one. It must have been for game two, right?
It must have been if it was, yeah. I didn't recognize
Yeah,
the
they
voice,
wouldn't have split them up between games. I
watched more of the game on Saturday. It worked out perfectly watching Saturday Night Live and then turning over.
Yeah, the timing was good.
Boy, the excitement happened.
Yeah.
That was pretty great.
All right, so Bill Murray has been to every game. Eddie Vedder tends to show up quite often.
Yeah, he wrote a new song, too.
Did he?
It's Eddie on Vedder Facebook.
John Cusack has been there.
Yeah.
So,
although he sang with the beach with Brian Wilson when I went to see Brian Wilson, John Cusack did.
Did he?
Yeah.
Oh, that's kind of cool.
It was pretty cool.
That's very good. We have not seen Jim Belushi yet. I hope he's okay because usually Jim Belushi shows up at these things.
Bonnie Hunt. Have we seen Bonnie Hunt yet?
Bonnie Hunt, we've seen in Los Angeles
with Tom Dreesen.
Yeah, when the Cubs beat the Dodgers toward the end of the year, right? They were up in a booth waving a big blue flag. So I'd be shocked if at least Jeff Garland and Bonnie Hunt don't show up to one of the games here. I'm trying to think of who else would it be an automatic
Vince Vaughn? Is he a Cubs fan? It's funny. A lot of people are Cubs fans when
all of a sudden
winning.
Yes. I know.
Up seats for real, true Cubs fans.
Yeah, those seats should go to Alderman and nobody else.
The prices are going down.
Are they?
Yes, because they believe that, you know, they're going to make it to the World Series, so...
They're waiting.
Yeah.
They're waiting patiently.
I should say Ryan Burrow, who was there last night, said he was hanging
another
out,
celebrity?
Hang out. He saw Bonnie Hunt, so she
was
there.
Oh, I thought Ryan Burrow was the celebrity.
He is.
Now, Steve, let me throw this at you. Do you have a second?
Yeah, sure.
Foul ball!
It's the best foul ball.
I was given the opportunity for game 2, last night's game. I got a call on Friday from a friend of mine who had tickets to the seats across the street. You know, one of the buildings across the street.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And to me, I'm not trying to sound selfish. I'm just being realistic.
That's not being at the game.
To me, it's a better view to see it on your television at home than across the street on a rooftop.
Yeah, and you're not in the park, so yeah,
right.
at home.
Getting the atmosphere of the park, certainly.
Atmosphere, schmatmosphere.
Atmosphere,
no,
schmatmosphere.
What you're doing is you're watching 42,000 people have more fun than you.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
You're not a part of it.
Yeah.
You don't get to high-five anybody, which you would just...
I wouldn't do that
...leave
anyway.
Them hanging anyway.
Right.
But
right.
You mentioned FS1, Fox Sports. What is the one for?
One.
It's just the number one. It's like their first, because they have more than one.
Right.
Oh, all right.
They have FS2.
All right. Well, FS1 did not show who sang the seventh inning stretch last night at the game.
Didn't. Who was it? Do we know?
Yes, we do. Listen to it first.
Guess Jim Belushi was there.
Oh, careful.
All right, so Nickelback sang the seventh inning stretch.
These guys are not singers.
It was not Nickelback. I know, I'm still going with Nickelback.
It was not shown on FS1 because I would have liked to have seen three of my favorite sports figures.
Oh, really?
From the Blackhawks. Jonathan Toews, Duncan Keith, Brent Seabrook.
Did they really?
Does it sound a little better after you know
that
it's them?
Yeah, that sounded great.
Good, man.
See?
Where can somebody buy a copy of that?
See, it's not perfect. It's hard to sing, I would imagine, because I suppose you're not really hearing it where it's going to match up or something because of the echo.
Once again, Ryan Burrow says, if you were in the stadium, it really sounded pretty good. I think he just wants us to know.
That he's on their side.
That he was in the stadium.
But come on, the enthusiasm was fantastic.
The enthusiasm should be fantastic.
And they took turns, you know?
Right.
It's not that easy to do.
Right.
So, yes, Captain Jonathan Toews, Duncan Keith, Brent Seabrook. Isn't that awesome?
I like that the teams are supporting each other. I told you the opening day, Anthony Rizzo was sitting there, got a huge hand, gigantic hand, maybe. He should have been at the batting cages instead of the Blackhawks game, maybe.
You're mean. See, you are, you know.
I want him to succeed more than any other guy on that team.
He will, too.
He will. I know he will. He's going to come through. Trust me, he's going to have a key hit at some point, and all will be forgiven. One for 25 doesn't matter if you get a huge hit.
Maybe he needs a song from you.
All right, maybe. Maybe I
maybe
will.
Maybe not.
What rhymes with Rizzo?
Wizzo.
See, work on it.
Wizzo the clown.
And, you know, I like to think that if the White Sox, because I...
That's it. It's Wizzo. That's
it's
it.
Just, that's the only one. It's going to be a
well,
short
then you
song.
You can change things.
All right. Lizzo.
Right.
You bury Rizzo in the middle then and you have something
all right.
that you all can right. rhyme a little easier.
There's no business like show Bizzo. There's nothing that rhymes. It's hard to rhyme with that.
It's pretty terrible you're a one-hit wonder with your Jake Arrieta song.
I'm the aha really... sports song.
Sock him in the nizzo.
Yeah, there's that. All right, we'll take a quick break.
Thank
and
you,
then
Snoop Bertrand.
More thoughts on this if you want to jump in. There's already calls lining up. Stay where you are. 312-981-7200 is the way to reach us. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
All right, we're talking Cubbies, and do you still have that tape of the three great Blackhawks singing the seventh
inning? Sounded great.
Well, it's funny because you and Steve were making fun of it until you found out who it was, and then all of a sudden,
it
wasn't so bad.
No, I thought it was fantastic.
Duncan Keith, Jonathan Toews,
Brent Seabrook.
Yes. That was good, Kevin.
See, that was pretty good.
I like that one better.
Shorter. Didn't. Oh, here it is. Take me out to the ballgame.
Take me out to the crowd. Oops, one wrong word there. Buy me some peanuts and cracker jacks. I don't care if I ever get back. For it's true. Root, root for the Cubbies.
Loved it.
Let's go Cubs.
Fantastic.
Let's get some runs. Is that what you say?
Yeah, you say, let's get some runs at the end of that. Here's what I've learned from Donald Trump. Earlier, it sounded like I criticized Anthony Rizzo. I said instead of being at the Blackhawks game, maybe he should have been at batting cages. What Donald Trump has taught me is to say it this way. A lot of people are saying that instead of being at the Blackhawks game, he should have been at the batting cages.
Great apology.
That's the more diplomatic way of saying what you want to say. Here's what I'm hearing. Here's what I'm reading. This is what people are saying. It's better to say it that way. I know that he will come out of it. People are panicking because Anthony Rizzo is a solid hitter. I think he hit around 290 over the season. Not quite as high during the playoffs. Addison Russell's having the same problems. We got a ways to go. It's not over. They're going to come through with a key hit or two. You'll see.
All right. Again, I feel a little responsible because at Brookfield Zoo yesterday, the boys and I pet a goat.
Yeah.
And it wasn't bad.
Right.
No, I really did. For a minute, I didn't think of it until later. I'm like, oh, my God, I'm looking through my pictures. Couple goats.
Yeah.
We fed them.
Yeah.
All right. Andrew, how are you?
Okay. You were talking about not being able to enjoy the atmosphere of the game from the rooftop.
Yeah.
I seen it over the weekend on Facebook. Somebody posted a video they took of game one from a mile away from Wrigley Field. You can hear everybody singing the Go Cubs Go song.
I can hear that a
mile away. Definitely. Definitely. I'm not surprised.
But don't you feel like you're kind of out of the loop? Andrew?
Well, at least you were in the area. I mean, considering some of the pictures they were showing after the game, just being down there on Addison and Clark.
Right.
That's true.
I know. I understand you're getting the atmosphere, but just for the sake of the game, I think you're better served to watch it at home. I've sat in the stadium. I've been in Wrigley Field for playoff games where if somebody's sitting in front of you and they're standing up all through the game, you can't see anything, and I say to myself, I should have watched this at home where no one's standing up in
front
of me.
For free.
Yeah.
Or exorbitant cable fees, but
right,
still.
Right.
Split out among all the shows.
You get that just about anywhere. I mean, even if you go to a Blackhawks.
Sure, of course.
So.
It's the weirdest thing when you attend a sporting event. If I live to be 1,000, I won't understand this.
You won't.
Just watch the game. The way the stadium is built is everywhere you're sitting, for the most part, sometimes you're behind a post, but you get to see the action. So as soon as one guy stands up, then the guy behind him stands up, pretty soon 3,000 people are standing up and no one can see.
Well, you all have to stand up then. If something's going on, you stand up.
But can't you see the same exact action while sitting down?
Well, you get excited, so you stand up. If a run's coming in, then after the excitement's over, you should sit back down.
But in real life, if you're not attending a sporting event and something excites you, do you just impulsively stand up?
We do. We kind of do during the Hawks games. The dog barks. Everybody's high-fiving each other. It's kind of crazy at our house. I bet you're the person at a concert that...
Sit down! Stop singing! And I mean the people on stage, too.
Andrew, have a great day.
Bono, keep it down. I'm trying to read. I yelled that during a concert.
You're turning into a crotchety old man. You won't high-five anyone.
No,
and you get
that's
mad when people stand up.
You get one high-five per nine-inning game, and then an additional high-five should they go into extra innings.
How many extras per inning? What if they go into, like...
One high-five.
Even if it's
50-inning
extra...
game, right. You get one for the first nine innings and one for any additional. And even that's grudging. I don't even want to...
You drive a hard bargain.
I know. I guess I do. I definitely do. And quickly...
What do you want to apologize
now? I'm not apologizing. I just want to point out the fact that Montero's pinch-hit grand slam in all the years I've been watching baseball was one of the most... I've seen a lot of exciting moments. That's way, way, way up there. If it's not the number one most exciting thing I've seen in a baseball game, it's really, really close.
It was pretty exciting. I watched it.
I thought it was a mistake to have him pinch hit. I'm going, there's better pinch hitters on the bench. And then he's quickly down 0-2. And I'm just sitting there going, see, this was not the guy to bring up in this situation. And then he just cranks one into deep right field. So much fun to watch.
You'd be a great manager.
Wouldn't I?
Why don't you coach the Bears? Can't do any worse.
Oh, boy. There's an idea. That's an idea. All right, a quick break. We'll find out what Ro and Anna have next. Stay here. It's Bill and Wendy WGN.